The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
I think we need to dig around in the junk drawer.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. Okay. I have found a few things that I think might be worth throwing out to you. So let me get my hands in there and dig
now
around.
Now it's time for the junk drawer with Frank.
All right. So I saw this. If you've ever wondered who would win in a fight, a grizzly bear or a gorilla?
All right. Ooh. May I ponder this? There used to be a show, actually, that pondered these fights. Mm-hmm. Between a grizzly bear and a gorilla, I'm going to have to put my money on the grizzly bear.
This is according to an expert from Yellowstone National Park, and he says bet on the grizzly.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
How much bigger? I think the gorilla would be faster, though, no?
No. But the thing is, a
grizzly bear can run when it gets up to a clip. It can run as fast as a horse.
I'm just surprised because gorillas have opposable thumbs and arms that they can use. Whereas,
for guns.
Yeah, if they could.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. You've seen Planet of the Apes.
They allowed to use weapons?
But wait a minute. Carrie Gunther, who leads Yellowstone National Park's bear management program, said that bears have claws and teeth.
Okay.
But so do gorillas.
But not like grizzly bears.
I'm still voting for gorillas.
They don't have claws.
They don't have claws. They have teeth.
Yeah, they have teeth.
I will chew that gorilla's ass right out.
Gunther said that he had no disrespect for gorillas, but he puts his money on a grizzly bear.
Yeah.
It has strength, teeth, and claws.
They're also bigger. A grizzly bear would be bigger than a gorilla.
Yes. The park's top bear biologist continued his perhaps biased backing of Yellowstone's big brown bears when Twitter users asked whether grizzlies or wolves ever fought, and he said that would be the bears are considered the top predator.
I'll tell you what would be an absolutely unbeatable foe: gorillas riding on the backs of grizzly bears.
Oh my God!
Because they have the guns.
Yeah,
the gorillas
right, with the opposable thumbs,
and then the bears have the speed and the claws
and the fangs and the big freaking
fangs and the fangs. Yeah.
Don't you think though that in a fight, right, a gorilla would be able to maneuver around the bear,
shuck and jive?
Yeah, shuck and jive
like a gorilla, sting like a gorilla,
come out like pretend like almost like cow tipping him, like he'd come at the gorilla's shank and then knock him over that way.
I think, well, no, you're talking, you mean come at the bear?
At the bear.
You're right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I think while the gorilla could get squat, you know, down, I do a great gorilla impression. Mm-hmm. you're going to have.
He's doing it right now.
Yeah. No, the bear is so centered and so, they're just a moving locomotive of teeth and claws.
Yeah, right. They seem like they're fat a little bit, and the gorilla seems to be all muscle.
Well, the gorillas have incredible tensor strength. There's a tensile strength. What do they refer to it as? They're incredible, but the bears are just awesome.
They're huge.
Yeah,
they're huge.
How big are gorillas at their biggest?
Nick, think of French Creek Outfitters. You know that bear they have there, that stuffed bear that's on its hind quarters.
Show me the goddamn gorilla that can go up against
massive.
That.
Massive. There's no way a gorilla's going up against that.
The gorilla would tap out in the first minute.
I'm thinking like in superhero terms. You know when you talk.
Are we talking super bears and super gorillas?
No. I'm talking about Batman versus Superman, right? Batman.
The bears can fly.
Hear me out.
Okay.
In this incredibly important argument, I think that the gorilla would learn the bear's weaknesses and would therefore take advantage of them. And
all the time that the gorilla's going to bear school, the bear is ripping the gorilla's head off.
Anyhow, this expert says that it would be a bear.
Now, of course, I would like to hear an expert from the gorilla camp,
right,
just so that we can be completely unbiased.
I mean, honestly, besides humans, who would win? Of all animals, land animals,
I think you'd probably have a good shot at a rhino.
Rhino, tiger,
elephant,
a hippo.
Usually weight takes it.
Yeah.
The bigger,
and it's one-on-one, right?
So. Yeah, one mano a mano.
I think so.
The way the Duke would have wanted to do it.
That's right.
Yeah. So
I just fought 10 gorillas. Prairie gorillas are the worst.
Probably an elephant.
Okay.
I would think. Because all they got to do is sit on you and you're dead.
Yeah, because I've seen like 3 or 4 lions go after an elephant and not
a puggle.
Succeed. Yeah. No, not a puggle.
What's a puggle?
It's a,
an
uggle.
And an uggle.
All right, so grizzly bears can weigh up, the heaviest grizzly bears can weigh up to 1,500 pounds. That's the biggest ones that they ever found. They normally weigh about 600. Male grizzlies, but the male gorilla weighs to about 400 pounds.
Okay.
There you go.
Grizzly.
Yeah. At the weigh-in.
All right. And by the way, somebody also asked in this Twitter conversation about whether grizzlies should lose their protected status as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act.
I'm more concerned with their tax-free status.
Gunther said, grizzlies have grown significantly in numbers and range since being listed as threatened. And he said, biologically, they are ready to be delisted.
I'm sure they're thrilled with that.
Right?
So, hey, guys, great news. We can get murdered again.
Yeah, so they may take them off.
You know, I was actually above, when we went to Alaska, there's a tram you take up the side of a particular mountain, and all the Kodiak bears are down there.
Those things are huge,
and they are, they're, I think they might be a tick bigger than grizzly bears.
I think they're the biggest bears, yeah.
They're just, we were up high,
yeah.
And they're just still enormous.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very intimidating. All right, let me dig around, find another story for you.
I like animal fights, if you have another one of those.
I do want to play this, because I saw this. It was a brother started texting his sibling the sound of his farts.
Yes.
After he moved away. So he would record his farts, and then he'd send, you know, we'd know people who do.
Yeah, we know. That happened to me.
Yes.
It's very easy to do, by the way, now.
Yeah, you just use your phone.
Yeah. Well, you have your, even in the texting, there's now a recording feature.
Yeah, you're right. So Casey does it all the time. He sends them to Kathy.
Yeah.
And this guy sent it to his brother, and he sent his fart, and it sounded like this. Okay, so that was it. And then he realized something. While he was listening to the recording, he decided to slow it down.
Yeah.
And let me play it for you here. And apparently what he found out is that is a major seventh arpeggio in B flat with an incidental at the end.
Explain.
Come on.
So it's a chord that's being played out.
That's
with
sort
a little
of
at the end. So he realized that it actually has musical notation. And and then I believe to demonstrate that, this is the same thing played on a flute.
Wow.
So you have this, and then this.
Maybe we're going to be a little bit more appreciative of our farts now and then.
Well, he decided to put it together and to create what he is calling his magnum anus.
Okay.
Or his, what was the other word? There was another term for it. No, it was a magnum anus, or I'll find the other thing. But this is it put together. And that's it.
So. Very inspiring.
Isn't that beautiful?
It's a pleasant piece of music.
His rectum opus. That's it. Rectum opus, or magnum anus.
I'm wondering what my friend Jeff, what his fart would sound like to music. Because, I mean, this is a masterpiece.
Yeah, but it doesn't have
a tonal. Preston, you're a musician. There's a shift in.
Yeah, it doesn't. They're like semitones in there. These are a hole in halves here in this.
What about that one?
I don't know. You'd have to slow it down. I mean, because that's what this guy did. He realized it once he heard that, and then it went from this to this, and then he found out it had actual
musical merit.
Tonal.
Do we suspect that this was the way that Beethoven
that
composed?
Music came about in the first place? It's possible.
Like the Blue Danube?
Maybe. What do you have here?
All right, so that's my angry fart. Yeah. I'm just wondering.
No.
No.
That's more jazz.
Oh, great. We're going to go through the whole library.
That's more spoken word.
Well, I have to do it here. All right, so here are some of my... Wow, that's a lame fart. I can,
no, don't say... Don't use the word fart. Say that's some of my music.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
Oh,
that's when you farted and heard it in the background.
I tried to mask it by you guys saying, yeah.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
At the end there. All right, go ahead.
What about this one? That's Jeff.
Slow it down.
All right, you want me to slow that down?
Yeah, why not?
All right.
Why,
we're doing
kind of a noir sound to it.
Yeah. Oh. Sounded awesome, though.
It was Friday. Bar crawl.
I don't
got to throw that in there.
Yeah.
I've eaten a lot of Mexican food. It's coming back to haunt me. I went to my favorite jazz club. The guy on stage was blowing hard. Something about this case really stuck.
The beginning of it sounds a little like a trumpet or a trombone. No, slow it down. Hold on. All right. Take it from the beginning. All right.
The city's dying.
You guys have anything else you want to do?
Yeah, I want to hear that backwards.
I would like to make this an opera. I just say that if people have questioned in the past when we do this, I know Pierre has issues with it. It's music.
It's not music.
It's, you know, and that's the beauty of it.
I mean, well, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
It exactly. Is,
or, right? In the nose,
or in the nose, or the ears. Or the... Right,
do you have another one? Let's see if we can find
another
musical one.
We're not done.
No.
I wanted to see...
One more.
Oh, that's in the middle of a conversation.
Come on, man. Get real.
Right. Actually, no. Look at it.
God, you are so loud.
That's... Well, Case, Steve's playing a sound effect, and at the end of it, you hear Case...
Again... I'm trying to get these loud sounds that are playing to mask the fart. Didn't work.
All right, go.
All right.
Here, listen. Actually, no. Look at it. Look at it.
Oh,
Jesus, dude.
Oh, my God.
That was our
live reaction.
Oh,
my God.
Hit it again, the whole thing. So this is how it played out. Actually, no. Look at it.
Oh,
Jesus, dude.
Oh, my God.
Everybody and everything stopped.
Your timing was horrible. Because you had this to work off of.
And you still managed to get it in.
It's not as easy as it seems, guys.
There is the option of holding it.
Yeah. No, there is not.
You know it exists.
Hey, I swear it exists.
Hey, before we even started this segment, I internally thought, and I want to go on record as saying this, Casey, you have been very good for quite a while now. You've laid off. Whatever you've been doing, you've backed off. You've gone. You've left the room. I don't know what. Although I almost had an issue because I was sitting here yesterday with my lunch. And you,
so he hasn't been good.
He let one go over there, but you gave a warning to one of our interns. You're like, and the way Casey says, he says, "Be careful, there's fart over here." And he gives a general area with his hands.
He looks like a conductor.
I almost said, "Dude, I'm eating." Okay, you know, and that's crossing the line. No, but you've been so good lately.
I walked out of the studio the one time, and there was nobody in this little work area over here. So I walk over there, and
Marissa's?
Yeah, and so I let one go over there, right? And then as soon as I do, somebody starts walking, and I'm like, "Oh man," because I wasn't done yet, you know. I had to cut it off. So then I go out the door,
yeah,
and I let one go, you know, and as soon girl walks around the corner. I was like, "Oh man,
good, that's what you get." I hope she was disgusted at you, by you.
All right, anyhow. But this guy put it to music, and he made it beautiful.
Beautiful.
You know, it's really
make your own kind of music.
Yeah, I guess you could do that. So anyhow.
Isn't that Sesame Street?
No, I thought that was, I remember it from Lost. Make your own kind of music.
Yeah, but there was a show, or Sesame Street show with the Muppets, where you learn how to make music, and anything can make music, and it's all music. Something like that. In other words, an inspiring message for your flatulence.
Yeah, it is. Now let's talk about something else.
Okay, it's hard to come back from that.
Well.
Oh, this?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
You want me to touch on this?
Hang on.
What is it?
Have you ever heard the term whiskey D before? Oh,
yeah.
And
I'm
not using the full D word at the end. Apparently, there's a female version of this.
There's whiskey V.
Yeah, Whiskey V. We'll call it that. Kathy, you ever heard anybody mention anything along those lines?
Well, okay, let me be clear on what this is. It means that you can't.
You can't.
It means that it turns into a desert down there.
Yeah.
For men,
for men,
circus tent doesn't go up.
Right.
And for women, it becomes the Baja, Bonneville Soul Flats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Does it have something to do with dehydration?
I guess so. I haven't had a chance to read the entire article. I had printed it up early and I meant to get to it and I didn't. But it has to do with the consumption of alcohol.
I think you're right, though, Nick. I think that would have to be it.
Right?
Because alcohol, when you have a high level of alcohol in your body, it causes you to dehydrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why part of the reason why you get so hungover is that there's no water flow in your brain.
But what about, all right, so are there different versions of Whiskey D? Because is there also a version where, you know, the circus is in town, right?
But the nobody, pools aren't coming out.
But you can't shoot the man out of the cannon.
Right. Okay.
That is a brilliant analogy.
Thank you.
Job.
It just came to me.
Yeah,
you know what?
Yes.
Yeah. You
because
yes.
That's the version I have,
right.
have had.
Been come to know now.
All right. Yeah, I would say so. But I mean, it's
but
more,
I would compare.
But it's more known as a it's perfect. Here we go.
Yeah. Is there a version?
But I would compare the female version to what Casey's talking about.
Okay. Not being able to
cross
man
the
out of
line.
The can.
For the man, it's, yeah, for that. Okay. For women, it's more Cirque du Soleil, and the petulant French performers don't want to come out.
That's right.
I guess.
Something along those lines. A little more tasteful.
A little more tasteful.
Yeah.
They don't want to do Le Dragon or whatever the hell they call it.
But apparently, yeah, I was not aware. And even though there may be real desire, and there is a lack of sensitivity and lack of the, you know, the man coming, the man out of the cannon.
Right. So there you go. There's a
See,
circus.
I thought it was just known that.
And a desert.
I'd never known that.
I never knew that.
I only knew the guy side.
Now, I've never been drunk or lit up, so I've
so
never encountered.
Have you ever had that?
Not from alcohol.
No, just a. I'm less a circus, more a movie guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
like what movie?
Let me think. House of Sand and Fire.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
No. Yeah. I think we all do. Just in general tiredness. You know, you'll get that. But you know, you have the best of intentions. But I agree with you, Preston. I didn't realize that the it was a. Thing that women encounter
no,
as well.
No,
can't even really talk about it.
Never heard that. I know.
Hey, we're doing pretty damn well,
yeah,
right?
You are.
Yeah.
But Steve, you know what? I got my version of the Whiskey D the day I lost my virginity. The night I lost it. It's just.
Yeah, he was telling me about this. The man didn't shoot out of the cannon.
The first time?
The tent was raised, but the man didn't shoot out of the cannon.
Well, let me tell you, that's all I have now.
Yeah.
Well, no, but he didn't even...
No sensations.
He didn't have the, you know...
No.
The gunpowder didn't explode to shoot the man out of the cannon.
Yeah.
It was, and it's terrible. I mean, this is my first time ever, you know?
Huh.
Yeah.
You've got the musket ball there, and it's not moving.
Right.
You'd think for the first time it was...
Right?
I drank
there'd be nothing to stop it.
So he lost his virginity, but the party didn't...
The bowling alley's open, but the ball return isn't working.
That's right.
For my first time, I shot three men out of the cannon.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, what did the guy do?
He said, I'm driving a bus here.
Nick, was this all at one time or?
No, it was over the course
These
of the
night. These are three sessions.
Okay. He had a splitter hooked up.
And you didn't even know her last name,
Three
right?
different cannons and three different men and
nice.
no idea what her last name is.
That's too bad. You don't know the girl.
I know.
Yeah.
Didn't we find her? No, that's a different one.
You found somebody. You found the room, where she stayed, that roommate.
And I sent her a message, and she didn't reply
on
to
Facebook.
Me.
Yeah, well, she didn't want anything.
Owing to our earlier conversation, would that be someone you'd want to maybe would
apologize to?
Yeah,
sorry you didn't come to Bucknell, because I was
hey,
into that.
You know what, speaking of Whiskey D, and the fact that women can have that as well, and Casey, and Steve, you had mentioned tired. What's another... do you remember the Hulk Hogan hidden video?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said he ate too much.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was there.
Regis was there.
I was filming the whole thing.
Yeah.
Hulk wasn't on his game that night.
But you remember he kept talking about, I just ate.
Yeah.
I just ate so much.
I think he was saying because he felt bloated and he felt out of shape. He was with, it was Bubba the Love Sponge's wife.
Yeah.
I guess at the time.
Yeah. I thought maybe he just, he couldn't, you know.
Hulk always brings it.
Maybe he just felt disgusting. Like,
you know what he did? He took the bandana off his head and tied off his junk. That helped.
Oh, okay.
like a male stripper does.
Yeah, that's right. They do that.
Yeah.
Tie it off.
Casey, was your second time with the same girl?
Yeah.
And it all went well?
She was my girlfriend, yeah.
Was it much better then?
Oh yeah.
You even got to the motorcycles in the cage.
Two men came out, were shot out of the cannon the next time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
I was making up for what I wasn't able to do the night before.
You said keep your ticket.
Yep.
Hang on to your stub.
Right. You stamped her hand.
Yeah. Right. You stamped your hand.
We'll make it good.
We can do this ride again tomorrow.
Right.
Pretty please.
pretty
please. Because that was so great.
But it's not like she's going, oh, I hope.
Yeah.
As long as what Alec Baldwin said, is everyone gets their cookies.
So, ladies, keep that in mind. If you drink too much, it might be a little bit on the difficult side. I didn't know that it was the same for you as it was for us.
I think we surgically carried that off.
I think that was okay.
It fell well within the bounds. It was just I saw this as a news article, and it was reported.
Mm-hmm.
And we are basically a news organization.
This is it, right? Is that what we are now?
Yes.
All right.
A well-respected news organization.
I love your newscast.
No, I love your newscast. So we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. So stay with us. B-Files coming up next.
Not only can you hear Preston and Steve, you can see them too. Check out the Weekly Rush on Xfinity On Demand. New episodes, you guessed it, weekly.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
There was a story in Cosmopolitan not that long ago.
We're big readers.
It's, of course, Cosmo, man.
Yeah.
Not that long ago, and the author is talking about the fact, it leads with, my mom is hotter than I am.
All right.
That's what it leads with. She said, as a kid, I was blithely unaware of this. I only knew her looks were important to her from the way her slick lotion skin smelled before bed and in the mornings by the warm cloud of hairspray of Lancome Maggi Noir that hung in her bathroom.
Lancome.
And she says, then at 15, a guy friend came to pick me up. As he shook my mom's hand, I noticed his cheeks flush and his posture loosen. Backing out of my driveway in his dad's Navy Volvo, he turned to me and confided, your mom is a total MILF. Is that something you want to say?
You do not tell a girl that you're dating or going out on a date with that your mom is hot.
She said, at the time, I felt flattered. I thought of the other moms with their round tummies and crinkly eyes. Prettier was better, right? But she said, I don't really idolize my mom's glamour. If anything, I sort of look down on it. And then she goes on how to say she's kind of struggled with the fact that her mom is this really glamorous woman, and she's kind of not that way.
And the piece opens up, too, to other things because of the fact that women now and just people in general, parents exercising, doing cosmetic surgery, getting enhancements.
Moms are way different today than when I was a kid.
You bet your ass.
But is this girl pretty or...
I don't know.
There was no picture included in the article, so we can't judge.
Yeah.
Yeah, your mom's hot, you always have to include pictures.
And either way, like, even if you take after your mom and, you know, you're good looking like your mom, it's still your mom. She's still hot. And then if it's the other way around where you're not, you know, you're not a looker and your mom is beautiful, that has to be hard. And I think it's the same with sisters too. Like I've seen that a lot. I have have some friends where their sister is just absolutely gorgeous and they didn't get those genes.
What's worse, hotter sister or hotter mom?
I think hotter mom.
I think so.
Just because of the generational gap.
Right.
And you're always living in her shadow. Although, I guess you're living in
a hotter sister, I think, would be tougher because
there's really
they're snagging the guys that you want.
Right. That's what I mean. There's competition between the sister, hopefully not with your mom.
But you can also get the sister sloppy seconds.
Right.
Whereas mom is a whole different thing. My mom was very hot. My mom was a model.
Well, you know, she was hotter than you?
Oh, by leaps and bounds. I knew that. Dad, who did you bang to get me? Because it's clearly not her.
I remember my classmates always telling me how hot my older brother was, and I didn't like that. And I was like, well, what about me? You know, but
oh, you're not.
No, you're not at all. That's
why I leave that part out.
Yeah, your brother.
However,
turnabout's
fair play because you are always. You know, women like you, Casey.
Oh, yeah.
You have a thing.
Women love Casey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, Casey's like the friend.
Yeah.
You're like a good friend.
I'm like the friend who farts
a lot. You're like State Farm.
Yeah.
The friend who farts a lot?
Yeah.
Oh, he's so funny.
Casey's the funny friend.
He gave me pink eye with one of his farts.
But here... How do you do that?
That's the old wives' tale. Yeah, yeah.
The next step of this is, though, as she becomes an adult... Her mom is still doing the glamour, hot thing.
Looking younger.
Yeah, and also she got like a facial. She got like, not a facial. She got a...
that'll do it. Because you can't quite make out anything.
A facelift.
There's a place on the corner called Bukkake's. Check it out.
Dude, shut up. but yeah, she got a facelift and all the stuff at, you know, in her 50s. And the daughter's going, why do you... You're married. You don't need to be doing this. But there are mothers that still, you know, being attractive... Not just looking good, but being attractive is still important to them.
Yeah, I think it'd be annoying. I think at a certain... Listen, because it was a different gender, too. You know, thankfully, you know, my mom was a woman. I did have to, though, deflect guys who were, you know, interested in my mother, which was an issue.
Kathy, do you have a problem that your mom's hotter than you or no?
No, my mom was beautiful in her day, but I wouldn't necessarily call her
in her day.
I mean, nobody's prettier than me at this point, right?
Clearly not hotter.
That's just laughable.
Oh, Casey's being funny again.
You know what?
A funny friend.
I do see pictures of my mom when she was young. My mom was beautiful when she was young. And
your mom's beautiful now.
She was so skinny and just like not... How I was when I was young. You saw me. I looked like a little Puerto Rican kid.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm like, wait, I clearly didn't get my mom's jeans.
I'm going to have to step up for your mom here, despite your allegations that she's ugly.
No, I'm not saying, no, stop it.
She's a beautiful woman.
No, I'm just saying I don't look like my mom. I don't think I do.
Hey, let me go to, I got to go to Jenny. Hi, Jenny. Good morning.
Good morning. You guys rock.
Hey, thank you. What's happening, Jenny?
So I probably have a hotter mom and a hotter sister, but I think the bigger issue was the hot sister because we started a new school and I was in seventh grade and she was in eighth grade, and she was like already developed, ready for boys, and so they expected that I was going to be the same because she was hooking up with them, so I was supposed to be hooking up with them.
That
was like more of a challenge. I mean, if it's your mom, they're not really in the same category. Your friends aren't trying to hook up with your mom, or hopefully your mom's not trying to hook up with your friends.
I hear that, Jenny. What about, though, the guys coming over to the house and seeing your hotter mom? Would you notice reactions?
No, I think my mom, like, she's always been in shape and taking good care of herself, but she doesn't have, like, that full MILF effect. Like, she's more conservatively dressed and not trying to do that. So, no, there was not. It's more like a natural beauty that she has and not the... You know, I want to bone you kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, I want to bone you vibe. But there was a hot MILFy mom in my neighborhood growing up. That way. Well, my mom was, but there was also Mrs. Foley, who was...
nice.
Thank
you, Jenny.
Bye-bye, Jenny.
I just had to play that. No, by the way, Kathy was joking about the Puerto Rican thing. We're getting a couple of texts in. She does not mean that at all. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the Puerto Ricans are ugly.
Yeah. Oh, no.
She just doesn't. She doesn't
call myself ugly.
I almost said something, though, just the way that you implied it. You're like, you look like an ugly Puerto Rican.
She just doesn't look. She looked different than she does now. She's completely changed the way she looks.
My mother has blonde hair, blue eyes, Irish. I look nothing like her. And if you go look at the pictures of
you look
when
like
I
Mario
was...
Lopez.
Yeah. Stop it. No, now you said that it was ugly.
If only you look Puerto Rican.
But I wonder, you know, it's okay, though, if your mom is, wants to still be sexy, right? All right.
But what if your mom is trying to live vicariously through the daughter?
That's a different story. Yeah. I agree. That's
it's Amy Poehler in Mean Girls.
Yeah. Totally trying to still be a teenager,
right?
And hang out with the girls and stuff. And that's kind of sad, actually.
Yeah.
But you know what though? If it's in your family, it's a nightmare. But if you're able to enjoy how things look, if you're mm-hmm. It's just a bonus.
I'm gonna go to Matt. Hi, Matt. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, you guys rock.
Thanks, man. What's up, buddy?
So I got a younger brother. I grew up on Long Island, and my younger brother was always getting all the girls, and he ended up stealing one of my girlfriends. I was in my bedroom, basically just got done with her, and she looked at me and said, "You know what? You're ugly." And she literally left my room and walked up the stairs and banged my brother.
What? Oh,
wait
a second. So you have just finished the act. She looks at you and says, "You know what? You're ugly." Walks upstairs and has sex with your brother?
Like, right after.
What bizarre science fiction story is? I can't even imagine. How would that happen? How would you let that happen?
I have no idea. But actually, afterward, me and my brother ended up, fist bumping. Yeah, that's awesome,
Well, yeah, because he's a total skank. Yeah. But
obviously, it didn't impact you.
I mean, I was kind of upset at the time, but afterward, it was kind of a conquest for my brother and I,
Okay, it's something you guys could do together. Right. Instead of that is the most bizarre story I've ever heard.
Turns around and says, "You're ugly."
Yeah, that was pretty devastating.
Just unpleasant. Did
that come out of nowhere? I mean, just all of a sudden, that's just popped out of her mouth.
Yeah,
amongst other things,
just looked over at me and said, "You know what? I'm done with you. You're ugly."
Wow. That's an Amanda Bynes thing to say.
It's a little harsh.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Were you a disappointing lay, Matt?
I mean, I guess so. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it was too quick for her.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Thanks, man.
Jesus.
I appreciate it.
That's a tender time.
I'm going to go to Michelle. Hey, Michelle, good morning.
Hey, Betches.
Hey, what? What's going on?
Yeah, mine isn't really dating related, but when I was growing up, my dad was single, and he was good looking, and he liked to go out and have fun. And I would have a problem because I'd bring him to back to school night and parent conferences, and if the teacher was younger or good looking, she'd be like, "Oh, so is your dad coming to the meeting?" Or the one teacher, I swear, now I'm a little bit older, and I had to take shorthand, and I couldn't do it to save my life. Who wants squiggles instead of words? But the only reason I passed shorthand is because my spinster shorthand teacher had the hops for my dad.
So your dad was, were your friends attracted to your dad as well?
No, because my dad was kind of he could be really goofy and silly around my friends. So I think that took any of the romantic thing out of it.
Right,
it was
okay.
The teachers and the moms, the single moms of my friends were always "Oh, is your dad coming to pick you up?" No.
Yeah, well,
is your dad bringing you to the party? No.
did you get protective of him?
Yeah, and it's funny because, my parents were younger, so my dad and I always had a deal that he would never date anybody my age or younger, and I would never date anybody his age or older.
I guess that's a good deal to have.
Yeah.
All right.
You can watch that fall apart quickly, though.
Let me go next to Megan. Has a story about us. Hey, Megan. Good morning.
Hey, you guys rock.
Thank you. What's going on, Megan?
I just remember one time I brought my son into the studio for his birthday, and you guys were all there. And as I was leaving, you guys were like, "Wait, that's your son?" And I was like, "Yeah." And you couldn't believe that. And you're like, "Oh my God, you're a total MILF."
That's probably true.
So he said that in front of your son.
Yeah, you said that in front of my son.
How old is he?
He's now 17, but at the time he was just turning 16.
And did you guys talk about that, or did he say anything to you?
He's kind of used to it. A lot of his friends seem to find me attractive. They follow me on Twitter.
Megan, reacquaint us with what you look like. Send us a picture so we can remember, okay?
Okay, I'll tweet it to you.
Thank you. And come on back in anytime.
Yeah, sure.
Bring your son.
What about that thing, though? What Megan just said, her son's friends follow her on Twitter.
Yeah, Megan.
On Facebook.
Yeah, that's right.
What are you putting on Twitter? Naked shots? Beaver shots?
definitely not. I'm a little too shy for that. I do post a lot of selfies, but
you put a lot of selfies. Okay.
And, but his friends follow you. I mean,
you know his friends are probably saying, "Oh, your hot mom put a selfie up again."
Yeah.
This is right out of my friend's hot mom.
Yeah, his friend makes a lot of comments.
Mm-hmm. My friend's hot mom.
Wait, on your Twitter, he'll tweet back to you?
No, he'll actually say say stuff to my son. The one time I needed to borrow my son's hoodie because we were at hockey practice, and he was like, I'll give your mom my hoodie.
Are you single?
Yeah, I actually am.
Oh, well, you are. You walked right out of every fantasy. 80s, and sex comedy. I mean, that is the ultimate scenario. And I'm surprised your son hasn't prematurely aged and started developing gray hairs.
Yeah. And your son is 17. How old are you, Megan?
I'll be 38.
Ooh.
Do you want to come to the mixer?
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about it. I used to go to the mixers all the time.
Well, hang on, and we'll get your information, okay?
All right, great, thanks.
Did you hear that? We got a Milford's coming. All right.
Boom. Watch the phones light up the next time we say this. Guys.
Let me go to John. Hi, John. Good morning, sir.
Hey, morning, guys. You guys rock.
Hi. Thank you, man. What's going on?
My mom's 49 now, and is a very attractive lady. My buddy actually went on her Facebook, saved pictures from it, and started posting them on social media talking about how my mom's a MILF. And sharing with the rest of my friends on all the wonderful things he would like to do to her.
Whoa.
That's a little inappropriate.
Yeah, so what did you do in response, John?
I just kind of laughed it off. I mean, it's funny. She's attractive lady. She's a hairdresser. So, I mean.
I think it's kind of funny.
But, yeah, it was a little awkward having everyone know.
I think out of respect to you, did it get graphic?
Yeah.
See, now that's disrespectful to you and to her.
Yeah, I got him back there, so I was all right.
Okay. What, did you bang his mom?
Dad.
His dad nailed his dad.
You know, Lou, he's got a story to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I won't say it now.
All right, thanks, John. Hang on. Let me go to Ashley. Hi, Ashley. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up?
All right. I thought you guys would get a kick out of this. I called a while ago about the bad divorces.
Yes.
The guy who cut the blazer in half.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great story.
Well, I still have a twisted father, so I have a better story for this one. I always had a hot mom. Middle school, I was the ugly duckling, finally coming out of it, finally gaining looks, gaining friends, had friends over for a party. I remember the comment one kid threw out was, man, your mom's hot.
Yeah.
You know, you look nothing like her.
What a silver-tongued devil.
Yeah, and then they would all give her hugs, and they were all chest-plated hugs, and she's a tiny waist, big-chested woman.
Her mom just cut her off. We had tiny waist, big-chested woman, and then it all went to hell.
I wonder where.
Yeah.
I don't. Are you going to go to line 6?
Yeah.
I don't buy this.
Okay, all right. Let me go to Jim. Hey, Jim, how you doing? Yeah, I don't buy it either. Had sex with girlfriend, sister, and their mom at the same time.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you're doing that. Well, if you're going to do it right, like this.
I'm sorry, that's not a conquest. That's just disgusting.
In some cultures, yes.
Stop it.
In some cultures, it's wrong.
I think it's the Super Bowl championship right
But
there.
My grades are bad. Oh.
Yes, three friends who are not related, but sisters and mother. No, that's...
Mother?
You dig that, huh?
No, it's just... I don't find it disgusting. I mean, if they're in the same room...
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Why not?
Oh, the cable's out. Wow.
No, all those scenarios in real life, I would imagine, would be a different story.
You would be, you'd have a heart attack.
They would freak you out.
I would run out crying.
Yes, it can't be good.
Yeah.
Let me go next to Ashley. Hey, Ashley, good morning.
Hey, got you back.
All right, cool. What happened? Did you just blow up?
So the end of the story was that we're having a pool party. She's parading around her itty-bitty bikini, and my dad's about fed up with this. So the following day, he borrows a backhoe and plows in our in-ground pool.
So your father,
her dad is insane.
This is the dude that cut the blazer in half, and then he fills in the in-ground pool. Why didn't you tell us this story the same day as the blazer? That's insane.
Because we would be on the phone all day if I told you.
All right, Ashley. Oh. So was it the fact that your mom was so hot and flirtatious, a constant adjective? I mean, did he become deranged because of that?
No, he was already a little throwed off.
Okay, a little off.
But yeah, he was never quite right. But basically, you don't tell him no, and if you do him wrong, he'll one up you.
Jesus.
Do you still have a relationship with your dad?
Unfortunately, he passed about 2 years ago, so he can no longer cause any more havoc.
Oh, I wanted to meet him.
Yeah. Do you ever go to jail?
Not since he had me. He mellowed out a lot.
So, yes, he's gone to jail.
Yeah. Did he ever go to jail, though? I mean, at some point.
Yeah, I mean,
Of course.
Of course. He could cut a car in half, blew up an orphanage.
Yeah.
But, he took our shit. He wanted a bigger driveway anyway.
Yeah, so you just extended the pool.
He wanted a bigger driveway anyway.
Where'd you grow up, Ashley?
Trevis.
Okay. Trevis.
Bucksco.
I crossed that off.
Bucksco. I was fishing for Upper Darby, but
no, you got Bucksco. No pools in Upper Darby.
What was that?
There's no pools in Upper Darby.
He's right.
Thank you, Ashley.
I feel bad for the people who buy that house.
All right. Thanks, Ashley.
And the ghost of the dad is there.
Wow. That's...
Queso is great.
I'm going to get some heat.
Yeah, you are. But we're having fun. It was a joke.
And it's your turf.
It's not like it made fun of Puerto Ricans. Like that's
her. Oh, yeah. They're all older mom.
I know.
That's her thing. She's the show racist.
Yeah.
But she's not. I always say that. It's a joke.
Kathy, she did not look. You would look at a picture of her as a kid and look at her now and go, that's not the same person.
I look like some ugly black person.
Stop it.
No, what she meant is, again, just to reiterate, is that the younger picture different of you, you look literally like an entirely different ethnicity.
Yeah.
Let me go to Lori. Hey, Lori, good morning.
Hey, sorry to bother you at work.
It's all right. What's up, Lori?
Well, when I was a teenager, I didn't really have a problem with a sister. I had four older brothers, but I was youngest, so I was the fat girl.
Okay.
So anytime I got a boyfriend, my mom kind of thought after the divorce and everything, thought she was the hottest thing on earth and started wearing all these slutty clothes and started hitting my boyfriend big time.
So she would hit on your boyfriend. So was she, in fact, attractive, Lori?
She kind of looked like Sigourney Weaver back in the day.
That's good.
Not so much anymore. So usually
she looks like Alien now.
Yeah. Kinda.
well, so that's just pitiful. That's just wrong. She would try to seduce your boyfriends.
Yeah, and they would all come back to me like, "Dude, you wouldn't believe what your mom said to me," and I'd be like, "What'd she say?" And
so Lori, what would she say without being radio friendly? What would she say to them?
She would ask them how serious we were and what we were up to, and if they ever needed, here's her number.
Whoa. What?
Wait, if they ever needed what?
What?
If they ever needed what?
If they ever needed to talk or call her.
That's wrong.
Okay.
So I lost a ton of weight. I got implants. I basically, got really good looking, and then it got way worse in my 20s. Like, she would bring them around, or prance around in front of them when I bring them over, and she'd be like, "Ooh, you're really good looking right in front of me."
That's pathetic.
So she was prancing?
Yeah, like in skimpy little outfits and stuff, and it's and they'd be like, "Dude, your mom's kind of masculine."
Lori,
masculine?
I'm incensed by this. What's your mother's number?
Do you think any of them ever... took advantage?
I don't think so. I hope not. That'd be kind of gross.
Well,
I don't want to know.
If they did, they weren't the guys for you.
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
All right. Wow, man.
All right. Thanks, Lori. Appreciate it.
Did you have growing up, was there a loose mom? A loose hot mom?
A loose mom?
A Mrs. Robinson?
Not that I knew of.
We had a loose mom, but not, no, she wasn't a hot mom.
Oh,
our friend's mom was, she sleep with anybody in the town, but she was not hot.
I gotta warn you, it's gonna smell like cheese.
That was a little bit, Steve, that was a little bit how it was.
Really?
Yeah. Like the cigarettes, the raspy voice.
God.
Yeah.
It's gonna smell like processed cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But you get used to it after a while.
Before you know it, you won't smell anything.
You'll look forward to it.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
It's a little bit how it was.
No, they always think, the audacity to mac on your daughter's boyfriends.
Yeah, boyfriends. That's just wrong on many, many levels. Let me see. There's a lot of stories coming in. Let me go to Rick. Hi, Rick. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Sorry to bother you at work.
It's all right. Okay. What's up, man?
So this happened back when I was very, very young. There's this girl in our neighborhood who everybody tried to get with her. She was like the classic dime.
Okay.
And nobody could have her. And everybody tried. And I felt like I was probably the closest to actually, you know, having a shot. And one day she invited me over to her house. And I got to meet her mom. And her mom looked exactly like her, except, you know, in her late 30s.
Okay.
So I thought this is, you know, pretty cool. And because I was getting to meet the folks.
Well, right.
And her was split up. So she had her apartment on the other side of town.
Yeah, great. Rick, what happened?
We're all hanging out and everything, and the daughter leaves, and in a weird turn of events, I ended up having a short tryst with the mom.
So you ended up getting into a relationship with the mom who just looked like a slightly older version of the girl you were going after.
Yes, she was, they were Spanish, and,
just like Kathy.
Mom, I'm sorry?
Just like Kathy. So what did the mom make, did mom make the first move?
Oh, absolutely.
And what did she do?
Well, she talked me into trying to give her a massage, which I'm like, oh, okay. You know, at first I didn't even think it was anything. And then
that's Bill Weston's
the massage
move.
Ended up, you know, turning into other things. We had this short but really bizarre twist.
Okay.
And so, there became this code where she would say, you know, come over for a cup of coffee, quote unquote. Coffee was the code for come over.
Get me sex.
And then show up and we'd have coffee. Now we got the subtle message there, Rick. So does she
her husband started like trying to work it out, and that was the end of it.
Then he was getting coffee.
It was like the, you know, I never thought it would happen to me. And I don't really talk about it because
it takes too long.
It infuriated my mother because I was actually just shy of 18 when it happened. So it was like we didn't talk about it.
All right, Rick. Well, good for you, man. You lived a fantasy, a penthouse forum fantasy.
Totally. Hang on. Dennis has a claim to make. Hey, right. Dennis.
Hey, guys. You guys rock.
Thank you. Dennis, what did you want to tell us?
Hey, first, I want to tell Casey that I'm an Upper Darby native. I now live in Westchester, but we did have a pool.
He had a pool.
All right.
We had a pool.
All right.
All right. What was it? Above ground?
No, it was actually Darby Creek.
Yes! Nice, Dennis. Darby Creek was your pool.
Yeah. If Casey's familiar, there was a big slide behind an apartment complex off Marshall Road. It was filled with algae. You used to slide down the algae. Nice.
Dude, oh, my God.
That's disgusting.
That great.
You remember One River Road? There was a house that a built-in pool slide into the
river.
Slimy river.
Yeah. The Schuylkill River. That's funny.
Yeah, you just have to take care not to hit all the debris that's floating in the
yes,
river.
Yes, it's true. Bodies. No car parts and whatnot. Yeah.
Not all signs right. And car tires. So anyway, growing up, we had a girl that was kind of, you know, our friend, and we would frequently hang out at her home. And her mother...
Have coffee. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And have coffee, right, was very attractive. And so we had a buddy who was, I guess, more promiscuous than the rest of us. And he started talking about, hey, he thought he was being hit on by her mother. So, you know, kind of things went on, and this would happen frequently. So he ended up with the daughter and the mother.
All right. Do you have it? Do you believe that's a verifiable story? Did he have them both together at once?
That was verifiable.
Wait a minute, Dennis, at the same time?
At the same time.
It's not completely unheard of.
No.
There are people, believe it or not, that are very relaxed in that particular scenario.
They're called porn stars.
No. There are some mother-daughter teams, believe it or not.
That just go out and want to score
crazy.
A dude.
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
So it was absolutely true, but...
Dude, well, that's...
Not only in Upper Darby, I guess.
Right. All right. Thank you very much, Dennis.
Then you go swimming. Go skinny dipping in the creek.
Wow. God, there are so many. I can't.
These
go
are
to
good
these
though.
These are good.
You know, guys are pulling over.
I know.
These are all fantasy stories.
Should I go to John here real quick?
Because
I don't quite understand this.
Just watch your.
I will. I'll instruct him. Hey, John, are you there?
Yeah, Preston, I am. How you doing?
John, we will use the term BJ for this story, okay?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I'm retired now, but I was a police officer, and at the time, two friends' mother, I pulled over and for DUI, and in the course of the processing, she offered a BJ if I wanted one.
All right, so was this to get out of the ticket?
Or just felt like doing that?
Yeah.
Or I really don't know.
Did you take her up on it?
What's that?
Did you take her up on it?
No.
No.
I mean, because
no. that's why you're retired.
I think that might be a career ender there,
I
Kathy.
Bet you that happens.
But,
a
John,
lot.
Did you say, you're Dave's mom, you know?
or anything? No, it was so, I felt so bad for those two guys. And obviously, they were happy that she was arrested for DUI because it was a big problem in the family.
Oh, okay.
However,
the random stranger BJs.
Yeah. That was never discussed. That was just buried. I never ever would tell them that or say anything about that. She was so loaded, but the bottom, it was just a whole sad situation.
Hey, John, yeah. could one of those breathalyzers detect a recent BJ?
Hey, was she good looking?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. You did the right thing.
No, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, years ago. Yeah. I don't know. But it was so the alcohol and stuff. It was
You seldom want to say that. Yeah. But years ago. So how was this? Oh, 30 years ago. She was amazing.
Yeah.
It just doesn't cut the mustard.
No.
All right.
No,
well, you did the right thing then.
All right. Thanks. We actually have a clip of that when he pulled her over.
I made him extra sloppy for this. I know how you kids like them sloppy.
Wow.
Now it sounds kind of hot.
Yeah. Now that you put it that way. Wow. Okay. Well, anyhow. Which one?
Number five.
We'll go to one more call, right? And then we got to take a break. I'll go to
Jake.
Hi, Jake. You're on the air, sir.
Hi. Sorry about you guys at work.
It's okay.
It's all right.
I think I'm going to regret this.
Hey, so when I was in high school, we had this one girl. She didn't look the greatest at all, but her mom actually won a national cougar contest.
A national cougar contest?
Yeah.
And so all you guys, was she loose a little bit? Was she flirtatious?
No, not really, but she would wear, like, very flirtatious clothes. Like, she wore the stilettos, the short skirts, the lower V-necks, like, all that stuff.
Right. I was hoping for more, but that's still
I saw on Facebook not too long ago a girl that I'm friends with. I guess I went to high school. There's one of those people that are like, yeah, I kind of vaguely remember that name. But she posted just won a MILF thing. It wasn't like a contest she entered, just pictures of that she had posted, just standard, nothing dirty or anything like that.
And they just called them off the site?
Yeah, and she's like, not sure how to feel about that. I'd feel pretty good about that.
I would.
I mean,
I'd love to be a MILF.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
That'd be great. I wish I was a MILF.
Experience the joy of childbirth.
Anyhow, this Cosmo article, the author really resents the fact that her mom is attractive and still tries to be and attractive flirt. She works on her looks to be attractive to men, you know, and she kind of resents it.
She doesn't even know why she resents it.
No, she just does.
Yeah.
You know, so anyhow, there's hot moms out there. We'll come back in a moment. Stay with us.
What's new?
Why do you ask?
Cage the elephant.
Call me when you're ready to be real.
Larkin Poe. Rival Sons.
We move through the world like shooting stars across the sky.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
The movie The Martian is getting great advance for it. Matt Damon stars the main character, Mark Watney, an astronaut. He's stranded on Mars. There's a mission taking place. They've had to evacuate people out of there. He gets left. They think he's dead. I'm going to play you a quick clip from the trailer here.
This is Mark Watney, and I'm still alive. Obviously. I have no way to contact NASA or my crewmates. But even if I could, it would take 4 years for another manned mission to reach me. And I'm in a hab designed to last 31 days. So, in the face of overwhelming odds, I'm left with only one option. I'm going to have to science the shit out of this.
I love that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So you can see what he's got up against, and he's got to get through it. We have four people here this morning to promote this film.
We're going to juggle like mofos.
Yeah, we absolutely are. On screen, you're going to see these two actors in the film. So please welcome Sebastian Stan and Mackenzie Davis to the program. Morning, guys. Thanks for being here this morning. And then we have some experts in the whole space side of it all. Not the movie side, the space side. We have Mr. Mars, James L. Green, NASA space physicist, and retired NASA astronaut Nicole Stott.
Who yeah!
Welcome, everyone. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
All right, so let's. Where did we begin, Steve?
Just in that clip that was played, you know, we think about, okay, you get lost. Maybe you wander into the woods. You get lost. Oh, my God. How am I going to find my way out? When I heard just that clip and I see the clips, that's a kind of lost and remote that you can scarcely imagine. But as we start to talk about missions to Mars and people who are signing on to one-way trips and so on and so forth, couldn't be happening. This movie couldn't come out at a more appropriate time. It's from the best-selling book that which sort of polarized or just got everyone thinking. As you put together a movie like this and the expanse of the movie, is one of the main things accuracy? And because obviously you have a lot of NASA input here. Sebastian, I know you wanted to be an astronaut when you were a younger man. Were there NASA people on set all the time as you were doing this to ensure the accuracy?
Well, no.
No.
you didn't really need anyone besides Ridley Scott, honestly, who was constantly talking to NASA, as you will hear from these guys.
He's one of the legendary, specific, meticulous directors.
Very meticulous, very, very specific, like you said. And everything was built from scratch. I mean, believe it or not, there's not that much CGI in this movie other than the big sort of landscape shots. Everything, the spaceships, the suits, and everything was done manually and from scratch, which was really exciting for us. But he had been talking to NASA for quite a while, I think, over a year.
Yeah, it actually started in May of last year. Ridley Scott called NASA headquarters and said, hey, we'd like to talk to some people that really know Mars. You know, when you read a book, you know, your mind paints that picture. But what a director has to do is really put it in front of you. And Ridley went out of his way, I think, to really get the look and feel of what Mars is all about.
And when you're talking Ridley Scott, you're talking Alien, you're talking Blade Runner, you're talking Legend, you're talking a guy who's known for creating worlds with an incredible visual sense. He's just a master at it. Was he the original director for this, or he came in?
No, originally Drew Goddard, who wrote the screenplay, was going to direct it and then decided to step down.
But Ridley Scott, I understand that Matt Damon was on board because he wanted to work with Ridley Scott, correct?
Yeah, well, I think it was Ridley that met with Matt and asked him to be in the movie, yeah.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Mars, and it's because we do geek out. We're imbeciles when it comes to this stuff. We try to understand it, but the announcement, James, that the Mars contains water, or very well might have liquid water, and everyone's talking about perhaps these missions to Mars occurring. What does this mean as far as the viability of those missions?
Well, it really helps us plan for how to use and leverage what's there. And water is a critical element. You know, we could bring all the water we can have on our backs and assume that's what we'll have left. But using the resource that's there really helps us be able to survive and work and live on Mars in return.
And I have to ask Nicole, because you've been in space. You've walked in space. You've been out there for hours at a time. When we talk about missions to Mars, manned missions to Mars, and people going and colonizing and so forth, you've gone about as far as one can go, you know, in this day and age right now. What about people who want to really go the distance? Is that something you can wrap your mind around because you've been up there before?
Yeah, I think so. And I hope more than people that have been there can wrap their mind around it too. And I think movies like this help us visualize that, help us look at the challenges and opportunities that are out there for us. And certainly what we're doing, I mean, one of the major things we're doing on board Space Station right now is looking at how do we explore further from our planet. You know, right now we're at this kind of 250-mile altitude above Earth. And, you know, that in the grand scheme, that's not that far.
When no, it isn't.
Talking about going, you know, even the moon or you know, back to the moon or on to Mars. And I'd like, you know, you mentioned one way. I'd like to think that whatever we're looking at is a round trip as well.
I love that because, yeah, and yeah. I think you know, these are the adventures. When I was growing up and watching all the missions and watching, I'm an old enough bastard to have seen that, you know, the first walk on the moon. And just amazed. These are the people. The NASA, the space program is that's as romantic and as adventurous as you can get in, you know, in my mind. You guys believe that as well? Or was it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I remember I saw Apollo 13 three times in the movie theater.
Yeah.
And I was blown away by that. And I remember going back to school and trying to build rockets and stuff. You know, I was in eighth grade, I think, at the time. But, yeah, it's the most romantic idea ever.
Because you're going, it's you're inspired by this dream, and you're risking your life. I mean, Mackenzie, the movie basically is three different movies, isn't it? Because you're dealing with Matt, you're dealing with the crew, and you're dealing with people back at Earth who are mounting all these things. And so, as we would imagine in a scenario like this, there's interaction. Were you guys interacting while the movie was being made? Because you might have to be like almost three separate camps.
Yeah, we weren't at all. I mean, the movie was really done in three sections, and we shot the NASA stuff first in Budapest for 3 weeks, which was my section, and then we left, and the whole Hermes crew came on, which is Sebastian and Jessica Chastain and Kate Mara and that whole crew, and then Matt closed out production by doing all of his stuff on Mars. So it was really separate, but... yeah, one of the cool things about promoting this movie has been getting to go to NASA and talk to astronauts and talk to scientists involved and seeing how, like, even the people on Earth, there's such a collaboration and everybody is sort of an adventurer and explorer in this really old-fashioned sense of the idea that feels like something you read about in books. But they're real, like, are real
it's
adventurers
very cool.
and explorers.
It's very cool.
Well, what roles do you guys play, Sebastian and Mackenzie, in the film? Who are you and how are you integral to the storyline?
I play Mindy Park. I'm a NASA employee, and I am given satellite coordinates to look up, and I actually discover that Mark Watney, played by Matt Damon, is still alive. We think he's dead, and we sort of are tracking the body, and then we see that the body's moved, and that the solar shields have been, or the solar panels have been cleaned, and that there's all the evidence from our satellites that there's life on Mars.
So right now, just a quick question here, Preston. Would we be able to, with the technology we have right now, be able to determine that shields have been cleaned on Mars?
Yeah, absolutely. No problem. We have a spacecraft there right now. It's called Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. And it can look on the surface with one pixel that's about a square foot or so.
Wow.
And so you can see your coffee table from orbit. No problem.
Jeez.
Wow. All right, and Sebastian, your character?
I play a flight surgeon on the spaceship, and I, you know, I'm responsible somewhat among other tasks about people's health, and I declare I'm dead. So
okay,
that's clearly I'm good at my job.
Does that give extra? It gives extra onus to you to be a part of the rescue mission because you're the one. Who's...
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, it's nice because it gives my character a little bit more of a thing. But the thing that we were discussing is that how and we were trying to really get this accurately in the movie is you know these guys have to move from task to task to task. It's about what the next move is all the time, and emotion is secondary, and that's why. We leave.
I'm actually amazed. Kathy has a question.
Doesn't really have to do too much with space. I was just wondering, because in the trailer, it looks like the movie has a little bit of comedy to it. How did you intertwine comedy into, you know, a topic like this?
Well, it was all in the way the book was written foremost is pretty funny, and Drew really echoed that in the script. And yeah, I think it's pretty honest that he's in space by himself for a year and a half, and while it's the single most terrifying event I could possibly imagine, with that amount of time, like, you can't be crying and wringing your hands the whole time. You have to find, like, many tones and levity even in the face of tragedy, and I think the movie is so good at representing that. And then there's so much comedy that in the brief moments where you see him sort of break down and feel desperate, you're like, oh my god, I forgot that this man is alone on Mars.
I was reading an interview with Andy Weir, the author, mm-hmm. and he was saying that at a certain point, I think that's what's resonating with people, because all the critical reviews have been excellent about that. Because at a certain point, you're basically a what the F. That kind of isolation. I'm impressed also by the, I think Interstellar did a good job also relaying the time of space travel, how long it takes. So, okay, we got to go get him. See you in this many years, and that's an amazing thing. Did you were talking about doing external shots? Did a part of Jordan double for Mars?
Yeah, a lot of it actually for all the outside sequences.
That was all
for
shot,
the most part, except for the storm sequence and
those were practical sets.
Whatever night shots were happening, I think for Matt, were all still in Budapest.
Wow! So, but you weren't there. For that, obviously, he was...
No.
Yeah.
No, I was gone.
Nicole, what qualified you to go into space, to go into orbit?
That's a good question. I think, I studied all the right stuff. I was excited growing up to fly, and flying was the thing that got me into all of this to begin with. And, ultimately, I think you come to the point where you're figuring out what you want to do, and knowing how we fly in space was the question I wanted to answer. Why things fly? Why can we fly in space? And I was really fortunate to learn about that and work about that at the Kennedy Space Center, where all the hardware is and where the astronauts come to launch. And seeing that around me, I think that helped me. The job I had, the education I had, and certainly the mentors that encouraged me to fill out the application.
Because I always think about the right stuff, and so I'm trying to think of like what physical requirements did you have?
Yeah, look
did
at
you
me.
I'm sure you're in good shape. They're not sending up Louis Anderson.
They keep you in good shape, and the medical is the biggest qualification coming in, really, from things that will disqualify you. From the standpoint of what can disqualify you is
how many days were you there?
My first mission, I was on orbit for a little over 3 months.
Okay, so I want to ask, because you're in pretty close confined spaces with people, and obviously you guys have a mission, but you're also people, all right? So how do you not get on each other? I mean, essentially, you're in a van with however many people for 3 months straight.
Well, what's really awesome is the space station is like multiple vans.
Yeah.
So it's ginormous. In the words of my son, it is ginormous. You can go your separate ways. You can have 12 people up there go your separate ways and not see each other if you want. And you don't.
No?
There are times
no gossip
where,
or anything.
Oh, sure. You're solving all the world's problems while you're floating around the dinner table. And
can
stuff,
you at least hang up your own posters and stuff like that?
In your own little cubicle, you can. Yeah, in your own little crew quarters.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many? You had a lot of time walking actually in spacewalking. How many hours were you outside the space station?
I did one spacewalk, and it was 6.5 hours.
6.5 hours.
Wow.
The impression,
it was that long.
That's pretty long. But how many times during that do you just look down at your feet and look at the Earth below you and just go, dear God, this is amazing?
It's overwhelmingly amazing, actually, almost to where your brain can't process it. It's just that beautiful, that impressive. And it's really cool that you actually float out and don't fall,
I mean,
you kind of have to mentally get over that at first. And then you're very deliberate about your handholds and your tethers and things like that. But there is just this beauty around you that, quite honestly, you have to go back to that. We have this mission. We have these tasks. And
you've got to soldier on and do it. Yeah. An incredible degree of focus, I assume.
Yeah.
Jim, I wanted to ask you about the human condition of being alone on a planet like Mars for an extended period of time and not going crazy. Is the human condition, would that allow you to actually survive?
Well, I think Andy Weir's book and the movie it does a tremendous job that these are indeed special people. One of my favorite scenes is indeed Mark Watney can be very depressed in his situation, but then all of a sudden the science and engineering side of his brain kicks in, and he decides he can solve this problem. He can live on Mars, and he can do everything he can to stay alive.
Is part of what keeps him going the possibility of an Oscar nomination? I'm just wondering.
How could you not let that,
that
keep,
would
you
keep
going?
You going. Yeah.
Well, let's, in terms of talking about what keeps him going, he doesn't have a wife. He doesn't have kids. He doesn't have a daughter to come home to.
Okay.
It's all about life. He loves life.
Yeah.
And he's going to do everything he can to survive.
Well, there is talk of Academy Award nominations. I mean, it's, you know, always there's rumblings, but
it bumps me out a little bit though, because I just saw Black Mass a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, oh, Johnny Depp, he's got this. And then I hear about The Martian.
Matt Damon, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I think movies like this, you know, Gravity and Interstellar, people is, oh, space is a viable, depicted accurately, space is a viable deal, and it just preys upon our normal. Our desire to be adventurous, and yet our fear of what might happen when we go out and do that. So you obviously, Sebastian, you gave up the astronaut thing. You're not still pursuing that, right? Acting working out quite well.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I was in Budapest trying to film this movie having a panic attack because I couldn't plug in my Apple TV. So, but, I mean, like, I'm not going up there.
You chose wisely.
Steven, what else is important, though? Superheroes. And there, I said it.
All right.
Like, we're geeking out on Sebastian. I think we're freaking him out a little bit. You can see a few Captain America
shirts. He immediately called
me
on my shirt. I was like a little bitch.
I know. Yeah.
I know. I love it.
But it's true. So we are huge fans of that stuff, obviously,
And we forge a friendship with Frank Grillo as well, who's one of your co-stars. Grillo. He's awesome.
A man of many trades.
Yes, he is.
Oh, he loves
tough son of
snack.
A bitch, man.
Yeah. Listen, if I can be around like Frank has been, like, honestly doing what he's doing right now, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, and he's got, obviously, the excitement for the Civil War movie, which is, when is the release on that?
May next year. Yeah,
I have to say that your portrayal of Bucky and the Winter Soldier, the relationship with Chris Evans in those movies sold the emotional core of the movie. Mm-hmm. Your friendship was so palpable and tangible that if that didn't work, the movies wouldn't work. It was just a great job.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Mackenzie, do you like the Captain America movies?
Are you kidding?
About them going on tour with Sebastian, but I can't wait. It's my heart is swelling with this talk of Winter Soldier
is so brilliant, and your co-star there is phenomenal in it.
Because they made this pledge to each other decades ago, you know,
to the end of the line.
To the end of the line.
And they stick with it?
And they stick with it!
I'm shocked that the movie's coming out in May, because people are chomping at the bit around Sebastian.
I almost hopefully we'll be back here, you know. We can talk about
We can talk almost about all your Oscar nominations for this.
True. Yeah, I almost wrapped my arm in aluminum foil. I thought that might be that. A tad bit over the top. good luck with you guys, everybody, in all your different involvements with this film. And it looks like the movie to see. So
yeah, you've got the preeminent director for this kind of thing. Yeah. You've got an incredible, we didn't even go into, you have Jessica Chastain, a huge cast. Mm-hmm. The advance reviews are phenomenal and epic, and it just looks like a home run.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Sebastian San and Mackenzie Davis and Jim Green and Nicole Stock. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for having us. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back in a minute. Stay right there.
Everything that rocks includes cool MMR swag you can wear.
Rock, 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 MMR Rock Shop. Get your MMR gear at the online store. Tees and tops and a whole lot more.
Rock,
hoodies and hats for dudes and chicks. Mugs and masks that make great gifts. Rock, 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 MMR Rock Shop.
Get your hands on some awesome merch at MMR's Rock Shop.
Rock, rock, MMR Rock Shop.
Get shopping at WMMR.com now.
Rock, rock, MMR Rock Shop.
All the merch that rocks.
The Insidious franchise is very successful.
Big fan.
Very scary. And the next guest we have in studio is in recently, Insidious 3, Chapter 3, I should say, and is also going to be at the Comic-Con this weekend. Please welcome Lynn Shay to our program.
Hey, everybody.
Hello, Lynn.
This is so cool.
It's so great to be scary.
And you do a great job. Now, we've talked about you, and we're going to talk about all the Farrelly brothers and all that great stuff, which is equally wonderfully terrifying and humorous.
Yes.
The Insidious series, you've done dramatic acting, and you have throughout your career, but this thing, the horror, like, you know, the first one was directed by James Wan, who's just a genius with this stuff.
Right.
And were you a fan of these kind of movies? Because you're so good at being in them.
You know, I love acting,
yeah,
and I love character, and honestly, those are always the driving forces for me, is a good story and a good character and good people. And when I met James, I love all genres.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really think about myself particularly as a genre actress, whether it be comedy or anything else, because I look first, again, at story and character.
Right.
And James, when he gave me the script, he said, you know, he was getting ready to do something. I took it upstairs. He gave me a hard copy. It wasn't on my computer, which I love having because then I can have a pencil and paper in my hand, too. And I got into bed. It was around 1 in the morning. It was late, and I thought, I'll never be able to stay awake to read this. And I read the whole thing and was so chilled at the end of the story.
Yeah.
I locked it in a closet downstairs. Because yeah. It's like you don't want to have radio waves by your head at night. You do sure. not want a James Wan script by your
yeah.
head at night.
Oh, sure. I haven't seen the movies. I'm not going to see the movies. I saw the commercials, the trailers. I'm like, no.
They are totally scared.
No, I was terrified just from that alone.
Well, you will be even more. The
I'll
fans,
be. But he'll yes, go. Yes.
See, I can't handle it. Anything otherworldly, I'll take people cutting heads off and all that stuff. But when it comes to other entities, I'm terrified.
You know, that's interesting because fear is a very interesting emotion, and what promotes that is a very interesting thing to me. I think this third chapter is the scariest of the three.
Wow.
Because it's going to scare people on levels they're not expecting.
Well, it's also to explain the first Insidious, which is an ingenious plot. You know, a couple has this child that sort of goes catatonic, and you're brought in, you have these psychic right. capabilities, and you have the money shot. You're the one who is in the room and looks up, and that's when you realize, oh, F, this thing
we're in
is
trouble
bad.
Now.
Yeah, because it's rocking your world. Not to do a spoiler alert, but by the second one, you've been, you're now only in the other
in
realm.
The other world. In the further.
In the third movie, this is a prequel.
Yes.
To the whole series.
Yes, so you do not have to have seen one
right.
or two to appreciate three. Three actually could be number one, and then you see the first and the second.
Which is cool, because I always wanted to learn the
more
story.
Release.
Right, exactly, which is the force and your character, where you came from, how you got to be where you are in this. So it's a fresh family and a fresh experience. And does this lead directly into the first Insidious movie?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
And it's where I meet Specs and Tucker, who are my so-called sidekicks, basically. And for me as an actress, it was totally exciting because when we did the first one, as an actor, you kind of construct your background, you
yeah.
know, so which the audience may never see. It's usually something that, you know, that you make up, basically, which and in this particular situation, Lee has written those elements of my life, which makes the character so much richer for me. So.
Did you get them sort of from what you were imagining to what was written for you? Did they sort of sync up? Were the minds meeting at the way you saw the character and the way it was filled in, or were you happy with the way the pre-story goes?
The pre-story is better than
okay. Oh, it's okay. All
because
right.
it's scarier.
Okay, good.
And so it leads the audience too into that world in a very particular kind of way. And I got to tell you, it scared me, which is even scarier.
Okay, well, then in your opinion, you know, Insidious 3, scarier, is that scarier or the shriveled breasts in There's Something About Mary? That
well, let me put it this way. Or maybe I have the breasts hanging on my wall in my office.
You kept them? I love that.
That is great.
I love that.
I can't take horror movies either, but I went and saw Kingpin in the theater, and I went and saw Something About Mary in the theater, and there are scenes certainly in both of those movies that scare the crap out of me.
That are horrifying.
Yeah, and I love how the Farrelly brothers would set up that comedy, because they would throw stuff at you that you just did not anticipate. You thought they're not going to go there.
Really?
And then they used you, and they went there.
They did go there.
You're such an elegant woman, and you know, what made them take you and put the landlady and Kingpin and Magda and these... And they have you doing horrific things.
I loved it all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I fought so hard. They didn't want to see me for Kingpin. It's a really long story. I'll make it brief if I can. But
yeah.
I was in Dumb and Dumber. I had a small role of Mrs. Noogieborn, or as Jeff Daniels affectionately called me, Mrs. Noogie Burger.
You're the one running the dog show.
Yes, yeah. In the dog show. Yeah. And then and Kingpin was described, the character was described as the angriest, ugliest woman God ever let loose on the planet. And I thought, there I am. But as an actress especially, and I come out of theater, I did theater in New York for years and years, and so my whole mind, to me that's gold, you know, that's like, so for almost 5 weeks I worked on that character in my bedroom, literally. I bought the little outfit, because Pete would call it my clown suit that Mrs. Dumars wears. And I just kept spinning off of what's the most horrible, what could make this woman be so horrible?
Oh, you nailed
it. A skin condition, and she, you know, she's not getting any, and I don't know what it's all bad. It was all bad. And I actually finally convinced them to see me the 5 days before they were starting shooting.
Wow.
And they hadn't cast it yet. And I went in as exactly as what you see on camera as Mrs. Dumars, and I was so elated to have at least express it.
You know, you make the movie.
Let's
take a walk down memory lane for just a second.
Okay.
Here we go.
What is it about good sex that makes me have to crap?
God.
I guess it's all that pumping. Pump and dump. You really jarred something loose, Tiger.
There's a scene.
It still cracks you up.
It still cracks me up.
But you know what? There is a, and this is the genius of what they did in your performance, is that it's poignant, because there's a later on that you show up and you're ready for another encounter, right. And you realize you've been had, and your feelings are hurt. The flower in this slimy hair. You're ready.
I really fall in love. You know, it's a perfectly constructed character, because you see her. She's introduced.
Yeah.
She falls in love. She's betrayed, and she seeks revenge.
Yes.
I mean, it's got the four elements that make a perfect arc.
Yeah.
And it was And I remember even though, but Bobby Fairley kept saying, he said, where'd you come up with that? But they wrote those lines. And I got to tell you, none of that is improv. It's all written by the Fairley brothers. Oh. And they wanted to cut You Really Jar Something Loose, Tiger. And I said, why?
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
I said, I swear I can make it work. And Pete says, no. And finally, I literally convinced him. And I'm so glad I did, because people have me write it on my headshot.
Oh, that's awesome. Here's another one.
You still owe me another month's rent. So if I were you, I would start doing some tongue exercises before Friday.
Well, there's almost a horror element when you show up and Woody Harrelson is daydreaming a little bit and looks in the rearview mirror, and there you are.
And Pete, actually, I didn't even know they had kept all that stuff. And when I saw that it was at the end, the very end of the movie, because I kept waiting for him to call cut.
And you just keep going.
I just kept going. And he said, I couldn't wait to see what you were going to do next.
And you bust out laughing in character. It's hilarious. All of those characters, with Magda. And I mean, you know, at a certain point, so you're saying from your vantage point, you're like, let me have it. I want to just dive right into these characters.
Right.
Because they're absurd, and yet Magda is a human French fry, but she's got this. She's a good person.
She's a good person. And you know what? Mrs. Dumars is, I think that's kind of the key, is I really look for the heart of the character, literally. Because there's no, when you think about it, even bad people, you know, even there's something that makes them human. You know? Because it's interesting to me that those characters really just live.
Resonate. Yeah, they do.
How do they get the dog to stick its tongue in your mouth?
Oh, my God. Do you know what? That just happened.
I
swear to God.
Oh, my God. And you just let it happen?
I just let it happen. And there was a part of me. Oh, wait, listen, this is great. Because it was Cameron's POV, what they call point of view. You know?
Yeah.
So the camera's on me, but it's supposed to be her looking at me. She started laughing so hard, she was crying. And I think, to be real honest, what the dog was after was the latex.
Oh, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Because he liked me. I mean, his real name was Slammer, Little Puffy. Yeah. And I remember holding him, and his little body was just like thrusting at my face. And I just kind of went for it. And Cameron was, and the whole crew were in hysterics.
Oh, had to have been.
And part of me as the actress thought, don't lose it, because if you do, you're going to ruin it, and you'll never get it again.
It makes that take so cool, because it does go on and on. It's a scene of excess,
and you just
can't believe what you're seeing.
And it was so great, because Pete came out after. He said, that's why we call this cinema gold. He said, you know, we need you. And it was such a great feeling as an actress to feel like you held on to something, that you were both in and out of the character at the same time, which is something actors have to do. You can't be out of control. You got to be in control while you're out of control.
That's wild.
It kind of angers me that movies like that, where the acting is that challenging, don't get more critical recognition, don't get Oscar nominations. And there was
they don't like comedies.
Well,
there was a
bit of a movement from the Farrelly brothers to try and get Bill Murray nominated for Kingpin,
right,
which he totally deserved.
He totally was.
And
he was
those
so
movies
funny.
Are perfect movies. There's nothing wrong with them, and yet they don't get Best Picture nominations, that kind of stuff. Is there any... Probably horror movies don't get as much as they should either, because that's not easy to do.
You know, I don't know the answer. I mean, you can say, oh, it's political, oh, it's this or that. I honestly don't know. I think, you know, there's so many elements that go into the big award shows and stuff. And
well, the Academy likes a certain kind of movie too. I mean, Silence of the Lambs did win the top four awards, which
course.
Was, you know, but they don't automatically look in that direction for that stuff. Now, your brother is Robert Shea?
Yes,
who created New Line Cinema.
New Line Cinema, yes.
Yeah, wow. And which is the Lord of the Rings and all of that, which basically...
Well, you go back,
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. I always think of Nightmare on Elm
the
Street.
The Ninja Turtles.
Ninja Turtles.
But the Nightmare on Elm Street really put them... It made my brother's hands warm.
You were in Nightmare on Elm Street, right?
I was in the first Nightmare on Elm Street.
You're a teacher.
I was a teacher, and my big brother, God bless his heart, he said to Wes Craven, put my sister in your movie.
Well, you chose wisely.
I hope I always like to think I can turn straw into gold. You know, you got to be given the straw, though, or you can't make the gold.
It's true.
You work a lot, and I'm reading here in IMDb, which is sometimes, you know, incorrect, but it says 179 credits, and you do several projects a year. Now, it lists your very first credit in 1975.
Hester Street,
and yes, and the character you played was
whore.
By the way, that is a great movie. That's Carol Kane was nominated
for an Academy Award.
It's a beautiful story
about the shtetl life in New York in 1920s. It's
just
a
masterpiece.
Film. Stephen Keats, who has passed away years ago, but it's a beautiful film. And I got to tell a wonderful story.
And you were an excellent whore.
I was okay, but listen, this is great. My parents. It was my first, like, really big, you know, a movie. I was in a movie.
Right.
So my parents came to New York for the premiere, and the scene was cut back. I play a Polish prostitute. It was actually a very nice scene where the sort of tagline is that I could make more money. I could make 25 cents an hour as a prostitute, where in the sweatshop you only earn 5 cents.
Right.
So I was doing it to bring my family over from Poland. Okay, so cut to the end credits where it says Lynn Shea whore. My mother literally got up, walked out of the theater, went into the restroom, and threw up.
Oh my God.
Mom, it's a prostitute.
Wait,
she said, no, it said whore.
You really jarred something loose, Tiger.
So sometimes I'm not sure if it's a good thing my mother is still not living.
Well, the stuff is great, and I every time I see you pop up in a movie, you're just one of those people. I'm not just saying because you're here; it's the truth. I'm on board. Snakes on a Plane. You were on Snakes in the movie Snakes on a Plane, which was when they brought you the script to that. How did that come about? Because was it originally titled Snakes on a Plane when you received the script?
I'm not sure what I think it was, but it was actually Jeff Katz, who worked at New Line Cinema and who's a wonderful producer. It's a great story because Jeff wrote my brother a letter when he was like 8 years old saying, right, I'm going to be an executive in your company, and cut to whatever many years later, he hired me for Snakes on a Plane. He was one of the producers on it. And I kind of got invited into it. I knew David Ellis. God rest his soul. He passed away. A lot of people are dead. Too many people are dead, in my opinion, general. But David was awesome. I did a little movie of his. It wasn't a little movie. I had a little part called Cellular. And David was an amazing guy, actually.
Chris Evans is in that, isn't he?
Chris Evans, yep. And so anyway, when I knew Sam Jackson was going to do it. I mean, I was so excited to work with him, and he is the best. I mean, he's bigger. He is exactly what you see. He's kind. He's smart. He's prepared. He's funny. He's a leader. He's a powerhouse of emotion and joy. I had the best time. We were in Canada, and Julianne Margulies was in it, and we had a wonderful, wonderful time. I love my job.
You have to, and you're in so many. What are some of my favorite cult movies? Like Critters, a movie called The Hidden, which I love from the 80s.
Yep.
And it's on and on. 2001 Maniacs.
Yeah, with Tim's. Well, you know, Critters and Critters was a New Line movie. And,
yes.
And well, so was Snakes That I'm Playing. I have been in a lot of New Line films because of Bob.
Yeah.
And then hopefully on my own. But and Tim Sullivan, 2001 Maniacs, and then he did the sequel to that, too. Where
what was the like title of that one?
2001 Maniacs.
Field of Screams?
A Field of Screams, right.
I love it. Those are cult movies to me. With like, a company like Troma, you know, they would go out and set out to make a cult movie, and sometimes they would fail because they're trying so too hard. New Line generated some of the best cult movies that were just generally just fun movies and popcorn eating good time at the theater. Yeah. So, who's your biggest fan base now when you're out and about, when you're doing Wizard World? What's the percentage of people coming up for the Insidious stuff, the horror stuff, the Farrelly Brothers stuff? What do you get the most of?
Well, right now, of course, it is Insidious, except I still get recognized all the time, which is crazy for Mrs. Dumars. And I get frightened when I go, oh my God, I must not look well today.
Yes. Yeah.
But what was kind of interesting is people that know I do that are coming for Insidious, all of a sudden they'll see, oh my God, that was you in Something About Mary. That they didn't even put that all together. And I have a really youthful, young fan base, which is so much fun for me.
It's got to
be. You know, because I'm so old.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's like it's like I'm the happiest I've ever been in my entire life, for real.
Oh, man.
I love my job.
Excellent.
This has been Lee Winnell and James Wan and the Insidious franchise and Jason Blum, who had the courage to take us and, you know, make us all real. It's just been the happiest time of my life. And so I have a very young fan base.
Well, you make the movies, you make the Insidious, you add that gravitas to them that really makes that really sells the horror element. I'm looking forward to this.
Yep.
They sent around a promotional vehicle, by the way, about a week ago. It was in our parking lot. It was
Oculus Rift glasses.
Did you do it? Forward.
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
But when we shot it, because I'm the one that leads you through, basically.
Yeah.
It was a hard shoot because I'm dying to see how it came out. I mean, it was
Casey did it.
Yeah. Casey closed his eyes through most.
From what
of
I saw, it was great.
And I'm happy to meet everybody. I love that you love my movies. I love that you love the Insidious franchise, and I love that you love me.
Oh my gosh, I'm in love with you. You're so damn cute. I can't stand it.
Oh
Excellent.
God.
Well, keep doing it.
You really jarred something loose, Tiger.
God bless you for saying that. All right, Lynn, enjoy your time in Philadelphia and keep doing what you're doing.
You guys are awesome. What a great interview. Thank you so much.
You. Lynn Shea, let's hear it for everybody. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Stay there.
Get social with Preston and Steve and WMMR. Facebook, Twitter, you know, the usual places.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
A wedding reception, as I touched on this earlier, in Berks County, Pennsylvania, turned into something resembling a regional police convention when officers from 16 different forces turned up to deal with rowdy guests, including the groom, who spent his wedding night in jail. From what police could piece together, the reception started to turn ugly when partygoer Mandy Groh punched another woman in the face after she complained about Groh allowing her drunk 14-year-old son to drink beer. The brawl grew, and according to a police report, by the time Northern Berks officers turned up, some of the guests were shirtless and bloody.
This sounds like a classy affair.
This is a wedding reception. Several people were trying to be a calming influence in all of this, but at that point, alcohol had taken over. It was written by a responding officer who received help from the Fleetwood, Hamburg, Penn State, Berks County, Wyomissing, Bern, Spring Tilden, Reading, and Muhlenberg forces, among others. The first officers to arrive on the scene had called for all available assistance when the crowd was, quote, getting riled up and turning on them. Four officers were injured, and a total of seven people, including groom Nicholas Papatouasis, who allegedly challenged officers to a fight, were arrested. And police say the very upset bride was treated for alcohol poisoning and dehydration.
Listen, I think the lesson here is let the 14-year-old drink.
As for the 14-year-old, he blew a .16, twice the legal limit for adults.
It's just insane.
What the wedding venue's owner had to say was, I wish the couple luck in the future because it's not a very good start.
Wasn't there another similar full-out brawl in Jersey, I think? Remember where the guy was up on the upper level, the balcony?
No, that was in Philadelphia. That was at the Sheridan Society Hill.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yep. That was a fun one, too. Up. We do weddings right.
Yeah, we do.
It's like a Kenny Chesney concert.
Yes.
A 50-year-old fetus was found inside the body of a 92-year-old woman. The discovery was made by doctors in Chile. The woman had fallen and needed x-rays, and little did she know doctors would actually find something quite strange on those x-rays, and the results had nothing to do with a fractured or broken bone.
Hi, I'm your baby.
Doctors were also surprised by the discovery. A large 4.4-pound calcified fetus was outside the woman's uterus, known as a lithopedion.
Quado.
Sometimes called a stomach rock or a stone child. Is a rare occurrence affecting just a few women. It happens when the fertilized egg is implanted outside of the uterus, known as an ectopic pregnancy. They called the case extraordinarily rare. While things like this do happen and have been reported in the past, very few cases have been confirmed over the years. Doctors will not be removing the fetus, even though it takes up the woman's entire abdominal cavity.
Why are they leaving it in there?
She's 92 years old. The risk
still has so much time left.
The risk is too great, and the surgery can be dangerous, especially for someone at an advanced age. The 50-year-old fetus has not been causing the woman any discomfort, which is another reason doctors don't feel the need to remove it.
50-year-old fetus.
They're just going to leave it in there. This is by far my favorite story of the day. The Winnipeg Police Service has apologized for the racy comments of the helicopter pilots who didn't realize that their public address system was on at time they were speaking. The three aboard Air One were on routine patrol when they inadvertently activated the system. As a result, the police station said, the flight crew's conversation was publicly broadcast.
Oh, boy.
And some content of the conversation was inappropriate. Parts of the course conversation, which at one point touched on oral sex, were quickly posted on Twitter and then spread across social media. The tweet started about 10 p.m. local time and caused the hashtag whoops and the hashtag speakerphone to trend in the Winnipeg area. Here's the first tweet that came in. It says, does the Winnipeg chopper realize the entire West End can hear their conversation about BJs right now?
Oh, my goodness.
And then another one came and said, yep, heard it on the North End, too.
Unbelievable. So this chick's got my pants off.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm going to get some action. But why is everyone looking up?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm there, and this chick is bomb. I mean, she is flat out bomb. And she starts yanking on my pants. I'm like, hold it. You're going to have your fun in a second. But then, get this, her dog comes into the room. There seems to be a lot of accidents happening now.
An official release, the Winnipeg Police Service, the Flight Operations Unit, and the involved members sincerely apologize to all members of the public, especially those who overheard the broadcast, adding the incident is being reviewed and the outcome will be determined at a later time.
My ass was killing me.
One of the first people to tweet about overhearing the remarks, Natalie Felakitas, said that she was enjoying a nice evening in her backyard with friends when the extra voices came from the sky.
Somebody had to have recorded it.
She said, we paused to listen and were shocked by what we heard. It was a hilarious and inappropriate human blooper moment. She said, I rarely tweet, but this moment seemed too bizarre not to share. And then just a host of tweets popped up of people who heard the whole thing going on.
I want to see if some YouTube video or iPhone video comes in with this.
And then one final story. A Lazy Glen resident has rejected a Colorado Parks and Wildlife's request to put a trap in his backyard after a bear purportedly collapsed its jaw around the man's ankle last week. Parks and Wildlife spokesman Mark Porras said attempts were made to place a trap on resident Peter Rizzuto's lawn Thursday, but Rizzuto didn't want one. He said, I'm worried it might trap the wrong bear. Rizzuto is 77, by the way. Porras said that it's Rizzuto's right as property tenant to not allow placement of a trap, but Porras said that the safety concerns could have a very serious conflict. Rizzuto said he was taking a nap on his deck Wednesday when an animal approached him. Rizzuto was half asleep when the bear, he initially thought it was a large dog like a German Shepherd.
You're just dreaming. Go back to sleep.
Approached him. Soon enough, he learned the sizable critter wasn't a neighborhood pet, but a bear. The encounter was short-lived, and the bear didn't break any skin on Rizzuto's ankle, but it wrapped its mouth around Rizzuto's ankle.
The bear clamps onto his ankle and doesn't break skin?
Yeah, I guess he was just kind of not. Maybe he's got a little foot fetish. Maybe he's just kind of nibbling a little bit.
No, not good.
Rizzuto said the bear didn't appear to be too large.
The bear actually paused to put a bib on with an ankle on it.
He contacted Parks and Wildlife about the encounter. Porras said the incident is problematic because the bear obviously is not afraid of humans. And if it is walking up to humans and doing this, it would not be a big surprise if it did it again.
So what? There's a bear he doesn't want to have captured. He wants to make sure the right bear gets captured.
Exactly. So he's concerned about some of the other bears in the area. It's in Colorado, so they think a little differently about wildlife out there.
Just a bit.
Parks and Wildlife might consider placing a trap on a nearby public area if one is available. And that is what I have for you in the bizarre file at the moment. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back in a second. A few guests on the program. So make sure you stay close. We'll be right back.
The Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Wait, turn up the sound.
93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
I'm going to play a little bit of music before we introduce our next guest because our friend Michael Giacchino wrote this. To the movie Up, and we just had him on the other day, which is cool. Good to talk to him. And in fact, he's going to write a song for us.
Yes.
Which is pretty awesome.
I don't even know how that happened, but it's going to happen.
He just asked, can it be weird?
Yes.
It can be whatever you want it to be.
Thank God for severe lapse in judgment.
But this is from the movie Up, and we have a couple of guys in our studio, and collectively responsible for a whole lot of great cinema and movies that you love, and I'll just give you a few titles. Up was one of them. WALL-E, Monsters Incorporated, Toy Story 1 and 2, Cars, A Bug's Life. You getting what I'm putting it? See, I mean, amazing
bunch
movies.
Of stinkers there.
Yeah, you know, just a couple of things here. Now, the next film that they are promoting is called Inside Out. Please welcome director Pete Docter and producer Jonas Rivera.
Yeah. How you doing?
Gentlemen, welcome to Philadelphia.
Thank you.
Thank you. No problem. So, yeah, we're excited about this next film. Obviously, you guys have a pedigree, and Pixar has just become synonymous with great movie, great animated film, and it seems like you can do no wrong. So we're excited. And the advance word on Inside Out is already really, really big. You've got to be excited about that.
Yeah, we had a screening over at Cannes Film Festival, and got an amazing response. It was pretty amazing.
They're receptive because we always hear that they're a very they can be a very mercurial crowd.
Yeah, we were nervous.
They even warn us, you know, that they boo from time to time.
Yeah, and whistle, right? Whistling is bad.
Yeah, whistling's bad.
Yeah, but they received it well.
They did. It was a little quiet during the screening, but then afterwards they stood and wouldn't let us leave for 8 minutes. So
it was a very warm response. Cool. We felt very, very lucky, very proud of it.
Is it screened in English with subtitles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the, I guess, the rules, house rules.
Oh, that's how it always happens?
Original language.
When you're watching the movie screen, and you've obviously seen it a few times, but you worked on it for, what, 5 years?
Yeah, five years
so
of our lives.
So when the initial concept comes to you, the thing that generates the notion to make the movie in the first place, to the time you're sitting there at the Cannes Film Festival, do you still feel, because I'm sure now at this point you've moved on with other stuff as well. You're working on other projects.
Well, we're starting. But yeah, by the end, you know every line, every cut, every, horror story that went into that shot and the arguments that we had and all that, so. Yeah,
we're just happy that it's done at that point.
Yes.
That we got through it. And then when you find that people, maybe they like it, it's just really rewarding. You're really proud of it.
We've had people come through who are promoting movies that they're not, you can tell they're not quite sure about.
Right.
And I always feel bad for them, but you guys, as Preston said, can do no wrong. With that, what do you attribute the track record to of Pixar just to generating the top of the top, and not just animated, but just movies in general? What do you attribute that to?
Well, we actually do wrong. It's just we don't show it to you. we fix it first.
Find it out.
You fix it. Exactly. There's 8 or 9 versions of Inside Out no one will ever see.
Nice buried.
Speaking of Inside Out, let's get to the meat of the concept of this film. This is Steve, do you remember that show Herman's Head?
Absolutely.
That's what I thought of immediately.
One of the first few Fox TV series, their own sitcoms. I was on a Sunday night. Yeah.
Right. This is a look into the human mind, and I was actually thinking over the weekend about things like ego and id and your subconscious and all that stuff. And this movie gives these personalities and these little human traits actual physical beings inside of your head and what they're going through. So they're all the characters, you get to look inside their head and what these little, like, sadness and anger and what they actually look like and what they're telling this person that they're housed inside of. Where did the original idea for this come from for the story in the first place?
Well, it started watching my daughter, who is 9. She was 11 when we started this film. And she went from being, like, a really rambunctious, kind of goofy, crazy kid to kind of, 11.
Yeah.
So a little more cool and quiet and it made me kind of sad as a dad because, you love goofing around with them and rolling on the floor, and that's not going to happen anymore. So we just started thinking, I wonder, how did that happen? What's going on in her head?
And you'd worked with her. She did the voice of young Ellie. In Up. So she's working with dad and all that stuff. And then
kinda
there comes
like that
point where, and I love this notion because, we've talked about people, you tell yourself stories, or we talked just a little bit earlier about conducting a fight in your head with, these things that go on that you can't. You can see physical signs on the outside, but there's nothing that allows you to get inside someone's head. This is sort of at least an explanation of that.
Yes, until now. Now we can see.
Now we can see.
The truth of what's going on.
Well, I'm curious to know, and I'll find out when I see the movie, I'm sure, but I want to ask you guys anyway, do any of these emotions, or do all of these emotions show other emotions? Can joy or can anger show joy? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we thought about that too. I mean, when Pete first pitched the idea, which I thought was just such a cool thing of personifying them, we thought about them almost like if we do our job right, it'd be like Pixar's 7 Dwarfs or something. It's like completely gettable characters. But they can't just be one note. And one of the things, and you'll see this in the movie, is that they all have jobs. And we found this in the research. There's a reason why we have all these emotions, which was interesting to me and to us.
You did a lot of homework on this, right?
Yeah. There's a reason why you have fear and anger and disgust and why we feel these feelings. And so that gave us a foothold into the writing. Like, let's give them a job. And their job is to care for this kid that they're in, this little girl that the movie is about. She's really the setting. Mm-hmm. So their job is to take care of her, look after her, and so forth. So
this is Riley.
Who's an 11-year-old girl that the movie sort of revolves around, and the movie takes place inside her mind, and the emotions are really the main characters. But because of that, they anger cares about her. So he's mad, but he's also, he loves
her.
For her
good, yeah.
When casting for the movie, did you consider anybody but Lewis Black for the voice of anger?
No.
He was even in your original pitch.
Exactly.
Right? Lewis, and when we called him and said, we want you to play anger in our movie, he goes, yeah, really brilliant casting guy. So he teased us for casting.
Was he flattered and insulted at the same time?
Yeah.
Exactly.
He seems very proud of it. Lewis is amazing.
You have Amy Poehler as Joy, Bill Hader as Fear. Louis Black is angered. Mindy Kaling as disgust, not disgusting, but just disgust in general.
Yeah, disgusted.
Right, disgusted. and Phyllis Smith, who's great from The Office, as sadness.
Yeah, she's really cool.
And then you also deal with the idea. I love this. I wonder if psych classes are going to be taking this movie after a while, because you also deal with short-term memory and long-term memory.
Mm-hmm.
And you even take it down to the rudiments of what of the reaction of a brain freeze.
Yeah, we got to explore all the stuff that we all think about, but we never really understand. Like, why did I have that weird dream? And why is that stupid song stuck in my head? And all those kind of things we get to explain in the movie. So,
it's fascinating.
It was fun.
Yeah, how much pressure do you guys have to do you put on yourselves, having such a great track record, to make sure that this is going to be great?
Yeah, we try to make it great. But
a lot of pressure. I mean, We are so lucky. Like, we are guys that grew up loving animation and loving Disney movies and Warner Brothers cartoons, and somehow through luck and hard work, we get to do this for a living. And so we look at it like we really want to put everything we've got into it.
I mean, as a viewer, there's no doubt in my mind. You know what I mean? Like, viewer, when I'm going into the theater, I know to expect something awesome. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
That's awesome.
We get to work with amazing people, both artists and, you know, the studio, Pixar, is run by filmmakers. Yeah. So you get people like John Lasseter, who are helping us craft these things, and he's making his own film at the same time. So you really have, you know, that guy knows what he's talking about.
Well, what blows me away about Pixar is the fact that you guys knocked it out of the park on the first shot with Toy Story. It was the first real, you know, full-length feature film that was computer animated, and it could have been just like, oh, here's this new thing, and it's a new way of seeing animation. But no, it still is. It's like the number one, I think, still. I mean, you look back at that so fondly, and how great it was that you just, boom, knocked it, and you haven't stopped since.
Yeah, that was 20 years ago. Yeah. That was 1995.
It's amazing.
I think we all knew that, you know, the story was what was important. We all kind of shared a collective brain. I mean, I remember sitting there, and we were like, oh, yeah, Buzz Lightyear needs some catchphrase. And I think John said, how about, like, to infinity? And I said, and beyond. And so, you know, just kind of like,
oh, that's
stuff
great.
Stuff like that comes out.
And isn't the edict, I guess, that Pixar is reading, is that make a movie you'd want to see.
Yeah, that's exactly the only real rule. You know?
Just make something you'd want to see. And the fact that you balance the human with the hilarity. I mean, Up ran the gamut. I mean, to be bawling your eyes out in the first couple of minutes, and then on to the lunacy of, you know, the squirrel and all that stuff.
Yeah,
talking
to her.
Right. All of that stuff is a balancing act. As you're directing, as you're putting together the movie, how many animators at any given time are working on it? Because you're 5 years still seems not enough time to make all the intricacies of one of these movies.
Well, at its peak, we have about 270 people working on the film. Not all of them are animators. So specifically, animators are the ones who create the movement, the gestures, the expressions. We also have people doing lighting and, you know, crafting the sets and building the characters. And so it's a big group of guys and women, of course, and really talented, amazing people.
When I think of Toy Story and Up and WALL-E and Monsters, Inc., and you guys have had hands in all of those movies, I think of them as being multi-generational, you know, and kids enjoy them just as much as adults. How deliberate do you have to be when writing for an audience that is going to be both? You're writing for kids, certainly, but you want to make sure that the parents are going to watch it as well.
Yeah, we write for ourselves first and foremost. I can't talk. It's just the radio, so I don't really have to be articulate. Okay, right?
No problem.
We write for ourselves, and then we're aware that kids are going to see it. So we do a bunch of different levels of things, of like slapstick and comedy, you know, intellectual comedy and physical comedy, and trying to really make sure there's something there for everybody.
Well, I've long contended that if you want a school of comedy, watch the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Right. Totally.
There was verbal, and those movies were directed like live action movies.
Yeah.
So they were using visual cues and things that you never saw before, and are still. I mean, were you guys as influenced by that as well?
Oh, totally. And Chuck Jones would say, "We didn't make these for kids.
Yeah,
you know? They made them for us.
And they weren't. They were on the front of live action Warner Brothers movies for adults.
From Bogart movie.
It starts off. I mean, we just never have thought about animation just for kids, and that's just. It's just kind of our point of view.
Is it weird that you guys are sort of like de facto parents to my child? Because those DVDs have played so many times in my living room, and you know, they become familial experiences for me. I watch them with my son, and we watch them over and over again.
And it's because of you guys.
Yeah, that's we sort of don't know weird. If we should apologize or thank you. Right?
Staggeringly weird. Yeah.
No, that means a lot. I mean, we
but
the
we
films
bond
we
over
grew
it
up
too.
On. That's yeah, cool. They're important yeah. films to like. I grew up watching the Disney movies or the Spielberg sure. movies of the '80s or Star Wars or whatever, over and over and over. And to be able to be a part of a team that makes movies that's important to families, that means more to us than you know.
Yeah, it's really if you're cool. just tuning in, we have Pete Docter and Jonas Rivera who are here talking about Inside Out, Pixar movie. It's going to be in theaters June 19th. Speaking of the Disney stuff, is it kind of wild to see these movies and then you go to Disney World and you see there's a Buzz Lightyear ride and these things are alive?
Totally.
You have no idea. I mean, Pete and I, we love Disneyland. We're in California, we come out and go to Disney World. We love the parks. And not 45 minutes after Pete pitched this movie, I was like, we should get this at Epcot or something. Like, this has to be a ride. You know?
To see the actual realization. But, I mean, when you're creating, I don't know what the marketing is. Every one of these things can be marketed out the yin-yang, and kids want to have this stuff. But do you have as much hands-on with the toys that come out in relation to the movie?
We do. We work with Disney at almost every spoke of the wheel. You know, the licensing, the publishing, the consumer products, the marketing. I mean, Disney does such great work of getting the movie out to the world and making it visible. But we have our say. We have our favorites, and we'll kind of art direct from the sides. But most of those groups, we just trust them, and they do great stuff.
Did you ever pass on something? No, we can't have, we can't have this.
We passed on the Carl Fredrickson adult diapers.
We did. I'm joking. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, we were right.
So can you guys just give me like a sort of an overview of what Pixar is like as far as, you know, the personnel there? Because the other big director of Pixar films is John Lasseter, right?
Uh-huh.
And so do you ever work with him? And
Yeah. Okay. We have John. We have Andrew Stanton, who's did Finding Nemo. He's working on a sequel to that right now. Brad Bird kind of comes in and out. He did The Incredibles, you know, amazing directors. And so everybody's working on their own thing. But at key moments, this is maybe every 3 months, I guess, mm-hmm. we get everybody together. We watch what each other are working on. And then everyone gives comments and suggestions. So
are you open to that stuff?
Or? Oh, yeah. You have to be. You have to be.
Right. Yeah, we get in front of we put the whole crew in there. And then we'll even add, you know, like the security guys or the kitchen staff or whatever. And so we'll fill a room. And you're trying to simulate what it's like to go to the movies.
Yeah.
And then you get a bunch of notes and responses. Or sometimes you don't even need notes. You can just hear what's working or not.
Yeah.
And then you course correct. And you do this over and over and over.
So is that the most fun part of it?
Or horrifying. The best and worst at the same time, you know.
So, Jonas, you were, I think, a production manager on a movie called Cars.
Yeah,
which I had no idea I was going to love as much as I did. I thought it was, and it was one of those ones, I think it was the only one I haven't seen in the theater, because I was like, talking cars.
Right.
And I was just blown away, and I love that movie. I love Lightning McQueen. Our friend Arnie Kempner actually says
hi. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know Arnie. Yeah, he was a great partner on the film. Great, great guy.
Yeah, he's the guy that Preston and I, we played golf in his outing last Thursday for. He wanted me to say hi.
Cool. Well, Artie, I mean, it's an example of the research we do. Like, he helped us with sort of the camera grammar and making sure it was authentic and so forth. And we do that on all the films, whether it's Cars, learning about the world of racing or Route 66 or history. On this film, it was, you know, neurologists and scientists. And anything, whenever we start, we dig into the research to try to, you know, get that into the film.
Did you guys learn some things about the human psyche that you weren't aware of before? And
we did.
And helped guide this film?
Yeah, tons of stuff.
We're all crazy.
We learned we're all crazy.
We're all flat out nuts.
Well, we knew that already. But
do you now think differently that you've learned all
totally.
This?
Totally.
And how you perceive what's going on in your mind?
I mean, the biggest thing I think I learned was just the jobs of emotions, right? That there's a reason that you have. And that really kind of blew me away. And so it does make me think more about, maybe it's, we spend a lot of time running from emotions. Like Amy Poehler, I remember when we pitched the movie to her, she says, oh my gosh, I tell my boys, don't be sad, like a command.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you can't do that, but we do it, you know, or don't be afraid. But we are. And there was something about that really, I think, helped.
Talk about change. Story. We had a great story. One of the guys brought his son in to watch a film, and he said, I got to tell you, after seeing... So he'd been taking swimming lessons, afraid to dive off the diving board.
Yeah.
He said the day after seeing the film, he jumped in.
Wow.
Dive off the day. He said, and they said, wow, that's great. How did you do it? And he said, well, I just felt like fear had been driving. And I asked him to step aside.
That's
really awesome. So hopefully it's entertaining, but first and foremost, but it actually gives kids kind of a new context for their own heads, I guess. Yeah.
I have to ask, because you said the original impetus for the movie was the change with your own daughter.
Yeah.
And do you feel if you had this movie, you might have been able to approach that a little better?
I don't know. You never... I mean, I guess... it is really pretty striking how much we are driven by our emotions, and we're even not even aware of it. You know, and that's the main thing I took away from this is like how much happens below the hood that you just like you make decisions, you make choices, and it's not even really driven by what you think of as you.
And it's okay to own that too. A lot of people beat like you say, Amy Poehler saying don't have emotions.
Right.
Yeah.
It's what you do. It's what we do.
It is. Exactly. It's also, you know, like sadness in life is something we try to avoid. We even self-medicate to try to avoid feeling sad. And yet that has a very specific purpose as well.
Yeah, I mean, we all struggle with emotions at one point or another. But I was wondering if you guys have considered how this film might impact children with autism and if you might consider a screening for them. Because they often struggle with figuring out what an emotion is in the first place.
Yeah, that is a good idea. I mean, anything like that that helps kids or helps anybody, I mean, we'd be totally open to that.
We mentioned Michael Giacchino, who is very cool, obviously, and won an Oscar for scoring Up, and as did you for directing. That has got to be such a critical aspect of the movie, the process of getting the music that works. He described what he basically just said. He goes and does it, and hopefully, you know, it's something that works well. Is the relationship to the point where you can just say, have at it, or do you give a couple notes?
Yeah, you always want to talk. It's really fun because by that time all the story work has been nailed down, but it's also really scary. As Brad Bird said, you talk when you get into music. I think he actually said this to Michael. You have the potential to ruin my film.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
get to work.
Be careful.
I can tell you exactly where a movie, like, for example, I'm a huge Bond fan. And when they did the movie Never Say Never Again, they had Michel Legrand, who's a great composer, but he's not John Barry. Right. And the music's totally wrong for Bond. And I sit there watching the movie like, no, that's not the kind of music. But like in that first sequence, in that beautiful montage that takes place, as brilliantly as it's directed, the music just helps glide it along, and it's awesome. It's the slam dunk.
Yeah, and so now having worked with him before, I think we really had a great rapport with him. The way he worked, it was awesome. So he watched the film with us. We talked a little about it. He went away, and then the next thing we know, he calls us up and says, hey, can you guys fly down? I want to play you something. So we sit. He says, I just wrote this. It's an eight-minute little suite. Just how your movie made me feel.
Yeah.
And he hits play, and Jonas and I look at each other, and we're like, oh, my gosh, he totally captured this.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
It's in the film. I mean, the music is now orchestrated in the movie. He means Michael's great because he approaches writing a film score like a storyteller.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't really sit and think about all the notes and the technical side of it. He just thinks about what does this movie need, and that's why he's such a great partner with us. And,
yeah.
And then he's collaborative, so you know you can give notes, but it's usually more about how something should feel. And he jumps. I can't wait to hear his song for you guys.
Yes,
yeah, but he asked if it could be weird, so it's going to be. Yeah. You know, I'm sure, but it should be cool.
I happen to casually mention I love the Planet of the Apes score, original Jerry Goldsmith Planet of the Apes score, and he's on the phone with us. He goes, I have that. I have a pot that was used in the making,
and he goes over and starts banging on it.
Yeah,
His room, his office is like a walk down. It's Hollywood history.
It's a little museum in there.
Everything about he's just amazing.
It's cool.
So can you tell us some of the things that are hidden in your movies?
Ooh. Yeah, there's always little hidden things like, so in Toy Story, we had the Pizza Planet truck.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how this, I think it was out of desperation that it ended up in Bug's Life. And now it's become a tradition that in every Pixar film, you'll see that.
What about the terrible neighbor from the beginning of the first movie?
Oh, Sid?
Is he the trash man in the third movie?
That's right, that came out. Is that Sid? Yeah, poor Sid. He ended
that
up.
Is?
Yeah.
Hey, you caught that. That's very cool.
I have to tell you something that my 12-year-old, he's going to be 13 in a couple weeks, but he pointed out yesterday, he goes, Dad, you know, in some of those movies, they hide some stuff just for the adults. He goes, like the scene in Toy Story 2 where Buzz Lightyear sees Jesse and his wings pop out. That's supposed to be an erection. And I was like, you got that, did you?
Was it? I didn't even get that.
Well, see, he was excited. You know? I mean, it's a veiled little, you know. Boing.
In this film, we have a line where they hear some noises outside. And one of the fear says, what was that noise? Was that a bear? It sounded like a bear. And then Anger says, there's no bears in San Francisco. And then, no, Anger then says...
He says, I saw a really hairy guy. He looked like a bear.
Yeah.
That's great. My kids laugh because they think it's a bear.
It's a bear.
Yeah. That's so great. By the way, A Bug's Life, have you been down to Disney World? That experience in Disney World is one of my favorites. I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Nice. It is amazing when you get to there. It is again in Monsters. This tradition really started because we called it the digital backlot. We didn't have time or money to build all this new props for every movie, so we just pull things. But then we got like credit, like, oh, we're being clever. So we said, okay, we'll take it. Now we'll just keep it the tradition.
So you'll see that. You'll see. We also have characters from the next film hidden in this film. Monsters.
Well, you think about it, it's actually, and I was reading a book on the production of what you guys do, and you talk about a digital backlot. I mean, to create these things costs money, and these files and everything, and if you can repurpose them, why
they're like
not?
Props. They're like props and sets and costumes.
That exist in cyberspace.
Right.
Hey, by the way, a few Pixar films I've gone to see, sometimes they'll have an animated short at the beginning of the film, which I love. Is that going to... happens with these?
It is. We're really excited about it. It's a new short called Lava. It's written directed by our friend Jim Murphy. And it's a... I'll let you guys all see it, but it's a love letter to the islands, and it's just really
it's like
something
going on a vacation.
And it'll make you want to go to Hawaii.
I understand that Riley, there's a short that involves her where she goes on a first date. Is that coming up as well?
That's later.
Okay, yeah. All right. You'll see that later. That's something that's coming out that we're excited about.
All right,
Pete, are you working on Toy Story 4?
A little bit at the beginning. John Lasseter is directing that one, and they're cruising ahead. It's looking great.
So. Okay.
All right. Well, Inside Out is going to be in theaters on June 19th. I want to thank Pete Docter and also Jonas Rivera for being here. Good luck, guys. I'm sure you got another winner. The word is great on it. So
thank you so much.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for wearing that Phillies hat.
Thanks for having me. We love it here.
Thank you, guys. Inside Out is the name of the movie. We are going to take a break. We shall be back in just a moment. Make sure you stay with us.
Monday nights just got a lot louder. Join MMR's Jackie Bam Bam for massive amounts of Metallica every Monday night starting at 9. Yeah. From the monster hits to deeper album cuts, spanning a Hall of Fame career, we're covering all the bases from one of rock's biggest bands. Check out WMMR.com for more from Metallica. Rock news, videos, and interviews with MMR DJs.
So true, Jackson.
The new and improved Metallica Mondays. 9 p.m. with Jackie Bam Bam. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Yesterday, we had a conversation with our assistant program director, Chuck D'Amico. Where is he? Is he in here?
Let's get him down here, Chuck, if you're in the listening area.
He had told us this before the break, that there are several foods that through his life he had never even tasted. That not only does he not eat these foods, he has never tasted. And these are not, like you said earlier, Steve, escargot. This is not foie gras. These are not these exotic things.
It's the never tasted thing that blew us away. Yeah. I could see I don't eat it because I taste it. I don't like it. And as I've said many times, to put this in perspective, and I use this because I think it's effective for you to understand. These are foods that if you were to walk around during the day with your mouth open, probably would end up in your mouth anyway.
Yeah.
So you almost have to actively avoid ever tasting a lot of these foods.
Yeah, and I think Chuck is a little nervous about this. I mean, he's gone 43 years without ever sampling any of these items, and now we're going to make this happen.
He's
Chuck.
Looking at there's a long table with all sorts of fruits on it. He's looking at it as if it's an autopsy table.
And you know what? And I want to thank Jay Schneider, who is from Acme Markets. In fact, he's the head produce dude for the entire chain of Acme, if I'm correct about that. He's the lead sales manager for Acme and produce.
I am in produce at Acme all the time. I was explaining to him that I get my watermelon and my parfaits. They're right next to each other every week from Acme.
No mushy!
I wonder if Chuck can even identify what these fruits are.
No, a lot of them I can't.
Really?
Wait, what do you mean a lot of them?
Point to one you don't know.
Yellow.
That's pineapple
and mango.
Orange and green.
Are they the same? Cantaloupe and honeydew melon.
He doesn't know. Are you kidding me?
All right, that's a kiwi.
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea. This?
Kiwis are awesome, man.
I would have said that's a kiwi.
It is.
That is a kiwi, yes.
All right.
So what do we start with? Listen,
real quick.
What?
You got to go the mild first.
I am very nervous, but only because 15 people asked me if I was nervous. Yes. You know, like, I wasn't nervous. Right, everybody's like, hey, are you nervous? I'm like, I guess I should be.
Well, one thing we did ask, and floated it out there from earlier, is would you be willing to wear a blindfold? You said you wouldn't want to do that because that might make it a little bit too intrusive.
Well, I can't ID this stuff when I'm looking at it.
Most of it, true. Yeah. He doesn't even know what it looks like.
He's also afraid we're going to feed him poop.
Well, no, listen, that's a valid fear.
We want to get real reaction from you.
No sane person would wear a blindfold and let Preston and Steve stick stuff in their mouth.
Right, that's a good point.
Right now, yeah. So I've been through that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You want to start with something mild? I think melon has a very mild flavor to it.
Let's go with the
fine. Show me a melon.
Let's go honeydew.
Like a honeydew melon is one of the more mild fruits. It's not real citrusy.
Wait. Am I the only one eating this stuff?
Yes, you are.
Eventually.
I mean, there's a lot of it.
Nick's going to eat, right?
We're going to offer this up to everybody because
I'm just hungry.
Jay brought in a ton of produce from Acme. So let's, what's that?
Start with cantaloupe.
All right, he's saying cantaloupe. Jay's saying cantaloupe.
Is this cantaloupe?
Cantaloupe is outstanding. I absolutely love cantaloupe.
And Preston,
love
you have
cantaloupe.
Some information about cantaloupe?
I don't have any.
Cantaloupe hails. Right.
So here's the deal.
Preston.
Rather than eat that entire piece, just take a bite off of it. And then have a trash can ready in case you don't want or you want to spit it out or something like that.
I was going to ask you if I had to swallow.
No, I think you should.
Yeah, you got to swallow. Yeah. All right, Chuck is now eating cantaloupe. First time ever.
Cantaloupe.
Juicy.
What do you think?
It's good.
It's good. And you've never tried it.
That's pretty good.
All right. I know you want to eat mine.
Isn't that good? There we go. Good.
Cantaloupe is outstanding.
Now,
cantaloupe
pretty good. And honeydew are paired often.
This is what Kathy eats.
Now, I will tell you personally, I prefer cantaloupe to honeydew. Yeah. I think it's sweeter.
I go back and forth. Yeah. I'll get on a cantaloupe kick, then I'll get on a honeydew kick.
Which one was that?
That was cantaloupe.
That was cantaloupe.
Okay.
That exotic fruit is cantaloupe.
As my father used to say, there's an O in open. It's orange.
Should we let him try?
Let's go citrusy.
Okay, all right, and then we'll come back around.
You sure?
Do we need? You want to keep it interesting? All right,
go ahead. He's the produce expert.
Let's go out of the melon.
Hang on.
Too many people are talking.
Too many people are talking. Get some water, please.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to say.
To cleanse the palate just a little bit. All right, you have some. All right,
my hands are shaking now. It's hard to drink.
You know what, Steve? I think you're right. I think he should stay in the family.
I think so. So go with
honeydew. All right, honeydew melon. This is similar to cantaloupe, just slightly different.
Preston, we've been in radio the longest here, so we know our produce radio better than anyone else.
It is green. All right, go ahead. He's eating the whole piece, too. All right, so honeydew, and sometimes they're riper than others. What do you think?
It's a little more watermelon-y.
Okay.
Than that one.
Than the cantaloupe.
And do you like it?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Which do you like better?
That one's better, orange.
There we go, I knew
orange
it.
Is orange. Better.
Orange is better.
I like the cantaloupe better.
I think I can read you now.
If I were blindfolded, I would guess that that's...
Watermelon?
The watermelon.
Okay. Uh-huh, okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Wait, have you never had watermelon?
I have.
No, he's had watermelon.
Press, can you get...
This doesn't feel like... Oh, it feels like watermelon. That's the whole thing. It's a texture thing.
Isn't that a Shania Twain song?
Just tell me what you guys want. I'm gonna grab what you guys want. So we have the order. So tell me what you want next.
Save the pineapple.
Okay, come on. We'll save
the
pineapple.
That's just love.
It's so good.
And you've never had a what is that?
Clementine.
All right.
Season.
Have you ever had oranges before?
He's had oranges.
Yeah,
right?
They're okay.
Do a clementine.
Clementines like
is that different?
Clementines are even sweeter than oranges, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really good.
And I know this may not be fascinating to you, but here we are.
It's never
this whole thing.
Yeah, or what? Or half of it.
Take a little segment.
Take a half of it.
This is like lunch for me, Chuck.
I know.
Yeah, you should.
This is cool.
Kathy,
I'm actually hoping to find stuff I really like that is on the healthier side.
Kathy eats so much of this stuff that she actually craps insulation.
Mm. All right, Chuck doesn't like clementine.
Well, okay.
All right.
I wasn't expecting that. It's hard to chew.
Yeah. And talk at the same time.
It's fruit.
All right. So, what do you think?
It's fruit. Yeah. Cookies are easy to chew, right?
Yeah, they are.
What do you think?
That's not bad. Okay, all right. I like it better than an orange.
All right, see? We thought so.
All right, you want to try something completely different and have a cucumber?
Just stay away from the hair and fur and all that stuff.
Yeah, go. All right, cucumber.
Now, we're going to get to the hair and fur.
There was an actual concern presented yesterday by some of our listeners and by our boss that we might discover what Chuck's food allergies are. And
that's a good thing.
Well, yeah.
Well, not necessarily.
Dr. Mike's still here?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Before you eat that, let me just... because for years, until I was an adult, I did not like tomatoes. I would not eat them. And then I started to eat them later on in my life and found out that I had... it was mild, but a mild allergic reaction to tomatoes. So I feel like when Chuck was talking about this, I thought maybe that could be a possibility that he doesn't eat things or doesn't like them.
Because
and
of
not even knowing, but yeah, there may be some sort of food allergy. So guess we'll see if your throat starts to close.
Cucumber, what do you think?
Cucumber, he hasn't had it yet.
This is very
mild. Eat the
whole
thing or bite?
Bite half of it. Just
to, it's very mild. There's virtually like no flavor to it.
I don't trust a thing you say.
Just take it. It's extremely mild. It's great.
But I could use a cucumber.
I love cucumbers. All right, so Chuck is sampling the
seeds in it.
Yep, but they're edible.
You don't like seeds, right?
No.
All right. You can get what's called an English cucumber that doesn't have any seeds in it at all.
Got a funny accent.
And socialized medicine.
Yeah. What do you think of the cucumber?
Tastes like nothing.
Yeah.
You know what's
right?
great? A little salt on it, man. Ew. Outstanding. We need
salt.
You know what you do?
Cucumbers.
You put a piece of cantaloupe on each side of it, and it tastes great.
No, that's this.
Yeah.
Oh, orange.
Orange.
Cantaloupe.
Cantaloupe.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Orange.
Is the texture bothering you on any of these?
This one. What was that?
The honeydew.
Honeydew? Hey, sorry, man. Look, it's my first day. Chuck, right. Shooting me looks.
Next up.
Do you want to do one of the berries, raspberry
well,
or
here's
blackberry?
The deal. I'm taking a scan of the table here. I think we need a progression. I believe now we go way out on the. You said you've had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or you've never tried
one
it?
One bite a long time ago.
All right, well, then we'll just eliminate that. But we need bold new turf to discover.
How about strawberry? He's never had a strawberry.
All right, this to me is one of the holy grails. Now, are these in season? Because
from Florida.
Okay, when they're in season, they are very, they're sweet and they're wonderful.
Get one of the really red ones.
Really red.
That means more juicy. What?
They're
this
both
has green on the end. Is
like
that okay?
A used feminine napkin.
See, this scares me.
Don't use that one.
Cut the tip off of the green.
You circumcise.
Just get another one.
That's better.
All right.
Now just take a bite.
Are seeds, right? Are they hard?
No.
Those little seeds?
No.
Seeds?
Well, they might be to you, but most...
he's nervous about the strawberry.
I'm excited that I might like it, but I'm afraid to bite it.
Just stick the whole thing in your mouth.
I'm excited that I might like it, but I'm afraid to bite it.
It's so good. They're one of my favorite...
That's my
fruits.
First album. Yeah,
I got it. Go ahead. All right. He's doing it. First time ever.
He touched it to his lips and said he didn't like it.
Bite it.
I don't like the feel of it.
Shut up and bite it.
Put the whole thing in your mouth. Just do it.
Go.
Go.
Go, 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 go. All right. He's chewing on it.
Bits in it. It has little bits
just
in it.
Just chew it up.
He doesn't like it.
No, it's like sand.
It's like sand.
It's a strawberry.
No, dude.
No, because of the texture, huh?
Right. No, the sandy bits.
Quick question. The sandy texture of it overrides whatever pleasant taste it might have.
They're like little crunch. They feel like bugs or something.
Right? So the question is, does the sandy texture override the taste of it?
It ruins it.
Okay. If these are odd strawberries.
It was juicy and tasty, but when you find those little...
Do you like a Nestle Crunch bar?
Yeah,
think of those as like crunches in a Nestle Crunch. Well,
there is a lot of food to get through here, so let's make sure that we proceed. Yeah.
All right, what do you guys want to do next?
Mm-mm-mm.
You want to do mango? We have the berries. We have pear.
Mango's so sweet.
Mango
is so good.
And mango's texture, I think you'll like, Chuck.
It's slippery like an eel. Where's the mango?
Try mango.
Let's do mango.
Yeah. See, that's not the same as that other yellow?
Here, wait, hold on. Let me, because...
Usually orange is more ripe.
Here, yeah, do this piece right there.
And by the way, I was talking to a friend of mine last night.
Mango Pete.
About this. He had heard it. And he's just like me.
Yeah.
And we didn't know. Like, he hadn't had any of this stuff.
Never sample.
His name is Sean. So hi, Sean. And hi, Lou. I promise Lou hello.
No,
what?
No get the
piece.
One that Kathy pointed out. That's going to be a more ripe piece.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. If I may, hold 1 second before you put that in. The strawberries are a little...
A little firm.
Yeah.
A little firm.
Okay.
That's all right. Okay, go ahead.
So what is this again?
This is mango. You've heard of this before, right?
Uh-huh.
He's like a little kid. Okay. He touches it to his lips.
He's shaking. Now that is a fantastic fruit.
It's like tangy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tropical.
Yeah, it's not so bad because...
It's citrus.
No seeds or crunchy bits.
Okay.
So you're good. You actually, I think so far the home run for you has been the cantaloupe because it's seedless. The texture's good and it's sweet.
He's gonna hate the kiwi.
This
which
isn't
is
bad.
An amazing fruit.
This isn't
now,
bad.
Now there are lots of seeds in cantaloupe, but you have to seed the melon first.
I remember about mango is when Ozzy was here. Were you here, Nick? When Ozzy came in,
he
wanted was a giant plate of mango, and one of the sales guys came in and ate them all.
Mango.
he just took a second bite.
Sorry.
Of the mango.
All right. I can eat that.
All right. Thumbs up for the mango.
Pear.
Pear. Okay.
Let's try pear. Take a little sip of a water, Chuck, and kind of
cleanse your palate.
Yeah, because this is much less citrusy.
I love pears.
I do too, especially juicy. Let me have one. I want to see. I want to let him know if it's juicy or not.
And hand me one over if you don't mind as well. I can tell before before you take it.
You want one?
These aren't ripe.
Oh, they aren't? Okay.
Nope. Wait, so don't hold eat on. It. We have another one.
Here. All right. This one is here.
I will cut your head off.
A pear always look like, why not just have an apple?
I agree.
No. Much sweeter.
A pear needs to be right at the point of ripeness. This is not.
If you let a pear go till it's almost squishy, oh my God.
Yes, you would not believe the amount of
juice that runs down your chin.
We got one that's a little more ripe over here, so he cut a piece for him.
So you need to ripen up a little bit more.
All right, go ahead, Chuck. Try a pear.
Skin and all?
First time ever, never eaten this stuff before. Yeah, the skin is very, very thin on a pear. No, I heard it crunch. It's still not ripe enough. What do you think?
I like it.
You take
all right, he likes it.
Now what you do is if you buy pears, you take them home, you let them ripen a bit, and then
is it a little softer?
Yeah, much softer. Yeah.
It's like an apple.
All right,
it's like an apple to me.
Wait till you taste a ripe one. They're so fantastic. All right.
All right. How about we do a berry?
Yeah,
Preston, I like pears.
I know. Isn't that cool?
Do you want to do raspberries because they have what Chuck says is fur on them?
He won't like them, but let's have him try it. And they're loaded with seeds too.
Oh, man. Oh, no way.
You can see little pubic hairs on them, right?
I would think they're bad.
Oh, and then there's a whole bunch of crunchy bits inside.
Yeah, they're loaded.
Somebody else
loaded
eat one.
Seeds.
Yeah.
Can you hear me crunch them?
Mm-mm.
And little bits of raspberry often end up stuck in your teeth, Chuck. You're not going to
look dirty or something.
No, it's actually good.
Try just a tiny...
Ate one?
Yeah, I just ate one. Yeah,
tiny little bit of one.
Just like a small bite.
Put the whole thing in your mouth.
Really? By the way, raspberries with chocolate, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. All right, listen. I'm earning my pay here.
Yeah, okay. You are.
I mean.
Come on.
All right.
I don't think you're going to like it, but go for it. One, two, three, go. All right. It's in his mouth.
That is disgusting.
All right.
Are you going to spit it out?
Raspberry earns the distinction of the first fruit.
What is that?
Being spat out.
That's terrible.
All right, we have blueberries.
And
taste
a cherry.
Is strong.
All right, blueberry.
Cherry. Cherries are great.
You've never had a cherry.
Right. Now, cherries have a stone in them.
What was that again? What are these?
Raspberries.
Raspberries. Oh, my God.
Now, blueberries do really well in Jersey, Chuck. So, like, in June in New Jersey, blueberries, you can buy them by the bushel full.
So you guys haven't loaded this? There's no trick?
Nope.
No, you're fine.
Nothing's been rubbed on our balls.
Acme,
it's all clean.
It.
Yeah.
All right, one of these?
Yeah, just pop it in.
Now, you know what? Eat it.
A handful.
Grab like three
Couple.
Of them.
Three
yeah.
of them?
Yeah.
All right.
Look, Kathy, my hand is shaking.
They don't have crunchy bits. They're not they're not hairy.
Blueberries, everybody.
From New Jersey.
Here we go. Blueberries, Chuck. Never, ever, ever sampled before. Blueberries? I just think blueberries are okay.
But there are little seeds in them, right?
Preston, they have a thin window of when they are absolutely in season, they are delicious.
Nice and sweet.
There's crunchy bits in them, but.
Yeah.
Okay. They're okay. They're good.
All right, good. He likes blueberries.
So far, the only stinker in the lot for you has been the raspberry.
Yeah, I think so.
And your favorite, I would say, so far has been the cantaloupe.
Yeah.
Right. He didn't love the honeydew either. Now, be careful. You know that there's a pit in the middle of the cherry, right?
What's that?
A pit?
A seed.
Like a seed in an olive. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a star of the movie.
So you don't bite it? What do you do with it?
You kind of have to, like, bite it.
You got
to
eat around it.
Spit it out?
You got to eat around it.
Put the whole thing in your mouth, and then you can spit it.
You got to eat around it. All right, hold on.
Is this the only cherry we have?
No, we have
one, huh?
I want one.
All right, so it's in my mouth, but I don't taste anything. I got
to
bite it.
You have to bite it.
Just
be careful of the...
All right, I'll feel it.
I love cherries.
That's no fun.
You don't like it?
It's too much work.
All right, spit it out.
I don't like that.
All right, not good. I can see he literally has a very pained look on his face from a cherry.
That I can eat? Raspberry, I could not power through it.
All right, what else is up on the list there?
Have you got the kiwi yet?
No,
we have kiwi,
fantastic.
We have grapefruit, we have pineapple.
All right, pineapple will be the last.
Okay.
Let's do the three more.
Jay, is there a chance that you can take all the skin off of one of those pieces of kiwi?
Yeah,
because I think that's going to creep him out.
What, are you supposed to eat the skin or not?
No. I just peel them, cut them down.
Yeah, but before that, let's have him take a huge bite of grapefruit.
You've had watermelon, right, Chuck?
Yes.
Okay, wait, we didn't do blackberries yet. Do you want to do a blackberry while we wait for him to peel the kiwi?
No, I want him to do grapefruit.
Are they some sort of nut over there? What's that thing over there?
Is that fig?
I would pick a couple of the home runs and do that, and ending with the pineapple. So
yeah. Wait, we have kiwi ready.
Please give him the grapefruit, please.
Casey wants him to have the grapefruit.
He's going to do the blackberry, he's going to do the grapefruit.
Who's
going to
eat one of these with me?
I will. Come on.
All right, good.
Blackberries are great.
I just hand you one.
They have seeds in them.
Go ahead.
So is it better, worse than raspberry seed?
It's you're not going to like it.
You're not going to like it because of the texture.
Similar
because
to
of the seeds.
Yeah.
Go.
Do just it. To say you've tried one, okay?
Yeah.
That's why we're doing this. We're not expecting you to like everything.
We don't even understand. Preston, you would agree. We don't even understand why we're so fascinated with this. But it's to just never have tried one.
What do you think?
Terrible.
Yeah.
All right. It was like a 5-year-old kid.
But now you know.
He's spitting it out.
Now you know.
So raspberry and blackberry he hates.
All right. Casey wants you to try grapefruit.
Here's the thing, though. I think he should do the kiwi first because the grapefruit is so flavorful and citrusy.
It doesn't matter.
No?
If he cleanses the palate.
All right, go ahead.
Casey's been biting at the
bit. Isn't grapefruit, like, dangerous?
No.
If it has a hand grenade attached to it.
There's, like, medical commercials that tell you if you're eating grapefruit and you can't take
medicine.
How do you eat that?
Yeah.
You can eat it like an orange. It's an appetite suppressant.
Excuse me.
I was eating lots of them before the prostate cancer, so...
Right before?
Steve, you're terrible.
Do we have any grapes?
We don't have any grapes here.
We do. We have.
Do? Have you ever had grapes?
Oh, yeah.
I've had green grapes.
All right. Just take a nice.
Just take a bite.
Big bite.
Go for it. Grapefruit. Chuck's never, ever tried these things before.
Yeah, I don't like grapefruit.
Yeah, remove that white part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the, it's like an
orange.
Just
bite it.
You should give him that.
Well,
he's good. He's fine. Go ahead.
Okay.
Bite it.
All right.
I almost dropped.
Because that's part of rind. All right, go
Cheers.
For it.
Cheers.
Cheers. Both of them sucking on a grapefruit. Chuck's waiting for Casey to do it first. Go ahead, Chuck. I don't care for grapefruit unless it's got sugar on it. Yeah, right? Yeah, Chuck doesn't like that at all.
I knew it.
Like
it
looked
like a kid that
had
lemon in his mouth for the
first
time.
I've never liked grapefruit, and I agree with you, Preston. It's only good if you have sugar on it.
Oh, that's terrible.
Isn't that nasty? And people eat them like crazy.
I hate you.
All right.
I hate you.
What's up next?
You're going to need to wash your mouth out.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
Have some cantaloupe. You like that.
Take some water right there.
Have a bite of cantaloupe. That actually would be a good cleanser.
Yeah, it is. Eric sits in his office and eats a whole one of them things.
That's why he sits in his office.
Yeah. Ugh, that's terrible.
All right. Are you good? Dude, seriously, have a little bite of cantaloupe. That'll clear things out.
That's orange, right?
Yeah. It's the orange-colored melon right there.
Oh, cantaloupe.
I love cantaloupe.
Mm. All right, so we're going to do the kiwi next, and then we're going to do red grapes.
All right,
kiwi,
and then pineapple.
Red grapes and pineapple, the final, the finale.
Ooh, this thing?
Yes, that's kiwi.
43 years old, and he's never, ever tried this stuff, ever.
Preston,
never
you like these?
What is it?
Kiwi.
I like, love
has like
kiwi.
10 times the number of crunchy dudes in there.
Yeah, but it tastes so good that you get past that.
Take the piece with no skin. Yeah, there you go.
This guy?
Yep. Yeah,
try that out. Man, that's... To me, they're like a big, juicy grape.
You know what? Sometimes I have them, and if they're in season, a kiwi is always in season, or
it's 52 weeks. You get them from California, Chile, Peru.
So you rotate around where you get.
Okay,
so it's always in season somewhere. Okay,
be a man.
Kiwi. Here we go.
Here it is. Pop it in. Should be very tender.
Right.
Like a love song.
All right.
It's the bits in it, man.
So you have a thing with the bits.
The taste is okay.
Okay.
Strong. Very strong.
Yeah. All right. But those little crunchies, you don't like.
You actually,
it's like, you know, Jimmy's on ice cream or something.
Will you eat something with poppy seeds on it?
Yeah, everything bagel
or sesame seeds and stuff like
that. Sesame seeds, I like. Yeah,
think of it like that. You know, I mean, these seeds don't really have any flavor. They're just part of the texture.
I could think it's filet mignon, but it's still bitty and crunchy. And
well,
my
let me ask. Let me ask.
Like an everything bagel.
Would you eat popped white heads off someone's scrotum?
No, that's a Marissa bit.
Oh. All right, grapes and then pineapple.
Red grapes. He's had green grapes.
Okay.
They are very flavorful. The strawberry and the kiwi, it's just getting past the little crunchy fellas.
I'll tell you what, in my own life, my own story, which is very heartwarming, is I've vacillated between red and green grapes as to which one I like better.
Yeah.
I am now in a red grape stage in my life.
Aren't there like darker ones, like purple ones?
Sure.
Yeah.
Is that what
I think
doing
you can eventually, Chuck, I think you can eventually get past the whole crunchy bit.
Crunchy
thing.
Bits?
Yeah.
The end is purple.
Grapes now?
Grape, yep.
Okay.
Grape. Red grape.
Seedless?
Should be. Mm.
Good.
Yeah, yay! Right? Good.
Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Bonus.
Another
thumbs
one.
Up. All right. He's having
another one.
How about that? That's going to be your latest snack food.
Accepting red grapes.
And then Chuck has never had pineapple.
Now, this to me,
over there.
pineapple.
That's dried figs, not nuts.
Yeah. You don't want to do it? He wants to do it.
All right, here, right?
Yeah. After the figs, then the pineapple. Got a lot of seeds
in it. The produce fellow was waving me off.
Well, it's, yeah.
Don't tell him that. Okay. Go ahead, taste it.
Go ahead. I have a pineapple. I want to see if it's ripe enough.
The pineapples that I used to have all the time, Chuck, were from a can when I was growing up, and I hated them. Once I had fresh pineapple, the world opened up to me.
Yeah. Oh, we have edamame, too.
Well, we only have so many hours in the show, yeah, for Christ's sake.
I know. I'm sorry. This is probably terribly boring.
No, no. I mean, listen, even if it is, look, if I can't damn get one it, out, we want to see it.
That's dry. It's a dry.
You like these?
I love figs, yeah, and I grow figs at home.
You eat the whole thing?
Do you know who has that every morning for breakfast? Nasty, Chuck, do you know who has that every morning for breakfast? James Bond.
You're not gonna try it?
All right. Have some pineapple. We got to move this along.
I'm sorry.
This is the sweetest fruit that you could possibly try.
All
right. It is so good. Love pineapple. First time ever trying it. Very juicy. It's running down his... What do you think of that, Chuck?
Beard.
Come on, man.
That's good. Real good.
Yeah, isn't that real good? Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. You've been letting these things get by you in life.
Right.
Never, ever had pineapple before. Fantastic. And he likes it.
And like never have the canned. You always have to have fresh because the can, they put a syrup in it that just F's it up. Natural, fresh pineapple is glorious. Mm-hmm. All right.
Really good. It changed my life.
In summation, cantaloupe, pineapple, grapes. Mango, you liked.
Cucumber was good.
Cucumber was good. These are things he's never, ever, ever had before.
Right, and I was right the whole time about the bits and the hair.
Bits and hair, you
are. That's his thing. That's what the texture he doesn't like.
And these guys. These were good.
Clementines.
Clementines. So he doesn't like berries, and that's pretty much it. Berry and kiwi.
And kiwi.
USA! USA! USA!
And as your reward, here's a Snickers bar.
Oh, wow. And he's never had a Snickers.
Oh, that's right.
You're going to have a bite of that?
What's in the Snickers?
It's caramel, nougat, chocolate, and peanuts. My favorite candy bar, by far. He's taking a big bite of that.
Milky Way with nuts in it, right?
Yeah, basically.
Pretty much.
Hard to chew.
Hard to chew?
Yeah.
What do you think, though, just on a preliminary?
It's not offensive, but, you know, but I'll eat a Milky Way instead.
That's a rave, yeah.
It's not chocolate icing.
Well, and he thought pears were good, too, right?
Yes,
yeah, pear was good.
He thought pear was very similar to an apple. Once it's really allowed time to ripen, it's a whole other experience.
All right.
I'm not a Snickers guy.
I'm glad we got this out of the way. Now, listen, it's not necessarily we wanted you to like all these things. We just wanted you to try all these things.
Can I try the peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
We do have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches over there.
I'll share it with you, Steve.
All right. So anyway, we'll have you try some edamame and stuff off air. But Chuck, way to be adventurous. He's 43 years old. Never had basic foods that almost all of us. Do you ever eat bananas?
Love bananas.
Okay. Yeah.
Had one today already.
All right, good. All right. Well, thank you for indulging us, ladies and gents. We just had to do this with Chuck. And I think not unlike Steve's early detection of cancer, you should try the foods you've never had before. All right?
Exactly.
I think it's all this wonderful little bit of love here.
Straight life, right?
Yep, exactly.
Awesome.
All right, Chuck D'Amico, Assistant Program Director, WMMR. We're going to take a quick break. We will come back in just a moment. Stay with us.
Like the Preston and Steve Show podcast? Check out MMR's other audio on demand at WMMR.com or on the MMR mobile app.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, WMMR presents Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
Had a lot of animal stories this week, and that does continue. Forgotten Josh Homme. Memorial Day began with all the magic of a Disney movie featuring a new animal friend and an unexpected adventure. But it ended a little bit differently thanks to some Montana park rangers.
Hom decided to spend the holiday at the West Boulder Campground in the Gallatin National Forest near Yellowstone. He was walking around the woodland area, and suddenly he saw something moving toward him. It was a baby moose or a calf, barely old enough to walk. Now, like any Montanan... That's a baby moose?
I don't know. I'm trying my best.
Like any Montanan...
That's a baby moose.
Hom knew that the calf's mother couldn't be far away, but instead of finding a moose cow charging at him in a maternal rage, he discovered her dead body on the ground next to that of a stillborn calf.
Killed it.
So the mother died. It didn't kill it. The mother died. The surviving moose baby was on his own.
Oh, my God.
At least until Hom arrived. When it saw the human, the moose calf came running, and it bleated and cried in despair over its dead mother.
A moose can kill someone very easily.
Oh, big time. It's really small. It's a baby. So when the curly-haired, wobbly-kneed calf tried to nuzzle with Hom, he let it happen. Hom even hugged the little guy, and he took a selfie of him.
Here, nurse on this.
he finds the one pervert walking around Yellowstone.
I'm lonely, damn it.
But anyhow, he hugged the little guy, took a selfie of him showing a man and beast framed against a sunny backdrop. It was a precious moment of interspecies sympathy. But things turned a little tragic in no time.
I love this part.
It started with Hom's...
Keep it this part.
Good intentions. He knew the calf didn't have much of a chance on its own, so he called... No, it gets better. So he called the Montana Fish and Wildlife Park Service. He said, clearly I'm not going to leave the little guy there. Hom didn't know it, but the calf would have a better chance being left alone. That's because Montana's FWP doesn't save moose calves. It blows them up.
Why does it blow them up?
As soon as Hom headed for home...
you gotta friggin' be kidding me!
FWP agents shot the last moose standing. Then the U.S. Forest Service officials put the carcass alongside its mother and twin and blew them all sky high.
What?
They detonated them.
This makes no effing sense. Why would you take this animal, beautiful animal, and blow it up?
Hom said, it's just unbelievable to me that that's how things are handled. It sounds just incredibly wrong. But a spokesperson, Andrea Jones, said that snuffing out the sweet little animal is standard operating procedure in Montana.
And found a falcon with its wing broken and blow it up.
She said we...
Guinea pig. Blow it up. We did. If somebody lost their cat, I don't like the way that sparrow looks. A daddy long legs. That cell looks a little precancerous.
I mean, it solves a problem.
So it seems an extreme way to solve an issue.
And now, while the Montana FWP does occasionally rehabilitate bears or birds of prey, it won't take in a moose, elk, or deer for fear of infection. They apparently can carry chronic wasting disease, which can be very devastating to populations, and it's also very dangerous to humans.
So like a flesh-eating disease?
Yeah. I don't really know, but they...
Or you just get wasted.
Maybe you just get hammered.
Oh, yeah.
But...
It's an elk, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. But I guess they need to blow it up because... Because
it's real good.
Because it'd look cool. I don't know, but they had to kill the animal.
You ever blown up a prairie dog? I guess to incinerate it, way.
Yeah, you think they could just burn it, but I guess dynamite's more fun when you're out in Montana.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
I got dynamite.
All right. A Florida man was arrested on charges of disturbing the peace after he was caught dancing atop a sheriff's deputy's cruiser.
This was here, right?
No, it's in Florida.
Oh, in Florida.
And the video is hilarious. Yeah. He's just shaking his stuff on top of this car, and he's up there for a while. The incident was caught on video, which was released Wednesday. Deputy said Christian Radecki danced on the roof of the SUV for more than 6 minutes before sliding down the windshield and then ripping off the wipers. He was later arrested, and when asked why he danced on the cruiser, he said he had been threatened by vampires.
Oh!
And that's why he was doing it.
I might have done the same thing.
Yeah. All right, we have time for one more?
One more.
One more, and that's it. Let's see. We want to end with a pretty good one. I want to make sure we don't have any more exploding animals or anything like that.
Yeah.
Gandalf the White and Professor Albus Dumbledore are having a wedding, and you're invited. And the two fictional characters will wed this Sunday, June 7th, at the Equality House in Topeka, Kansas. It is the building painted in colors of the gay pride flag, and it sits right across the street from the Westboro Baptist compound.
Wow, that must have been a hot time.
And it is, well, it's coming up this weekend. It is sponsored by nonprofit Planting Peace. A potential marriage between Gandalf and Dumbledore started as a viral news story when Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling tweeted a meme proposing what if Dumbledore and Gandalf were gay together. When Ireland passed the country's marriage equality referendum, Westboro then tweeted at the author, threatening to picket a fictional wedding ceremony, and Rowling had the perfect response. The series of interactions inspired Planting Peace founder Aaron Jackson to make the wedding a reality in order to raise money to counter the hateful messages of the Westboro Baptist Church. They will hire actors to play the parts of Gandalf and Dumbledore at what Jackson describes as a traditional wedding ceremony. In the past, the house has played host to Child's Lemonade Stand for Peace, a gay wedding, and a drag show, all essentially on the anti-gay church's front lawn.
Why couldn't they get the real Gandalf and Dumbledore?
They're doing that this weekend. So that is what I have for you in the bizarre file. We'll take another break. We'll come back in a second. So make sure you stay where you are.
93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks. Proudly supports the American Cancer Society Bike-a-thon.
Hey, it's Marcus. Cancer won't stop, and neither will we. Join myself and Team WMMR on Sunday, August 9th for the 48th annual ACS Bike-a-thon. This year, we're going virtual. The pedal power to finish the ride against cancer may look different, but the mission remains the same. Each Team WMMR rider gets a free team t-shirt, registration, and complete details at WMMR.com. And check out our custom Team WMMR apparel providers, Bolay and Go Cycling. Team WMMR and the ACS Bike-a-thon, virtually unstoppable.
The ACS Bike-a-thon, another way 93.3 WMMR is putting Philly first.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
What's going on this morning, Steve?
Well, Diddy is now getting an upgraded charge after assaulting his son's UCLA football coach. Diddy says it's a pity that attorneys for the city are ignoring the real nitty-gritty.
The second you said pity, I knew what you were going for.
I had to.
I love it.
Britney Spears and her record producer Charlie Ebersole have split up. They were having a relationship. They've been together for almost a year. Spears says the split was amicable, and insists that she's going to take a little more downtime before she shaves her head and starts trying to eat an umbrella.
Oh, my God.
And that's a Hollywood Trash.
I saw an article, the most offensive smelling foods to eat in the office.
You can smell it.
And, you know, because a lot of offices have either, you know, shared break areas and there's a microwave oven or something like that, or you you eat al desco, as they say.
Right.
Or have a lunch at your desk. Yeah.
This exact situation occurred. I walked through the kitchen and there was something cooking in that microwave that was kicking up an awful stink.
And you couldn't quite identify it?
I couldn't quite identify it. And okay. I just, thank God I was on the way out, leaving. Yeah. But it was bad.
I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind, and it's not an unpleasant odor. However, I'm sure people don't like the smell of popcorn, right?
Well, that's this first one on this list. It's not top of the list. It's at the bottom of the list.
It's popcorn?
I think popcorn smells awesome when people cook it in the microwave.
Popcorn, though, can drive people nuts.
But here's the deal. If you go like 10 seconds too long on it.
Yeah.
And you burn a little bit of it. That sting can be pretty nasty. Or that stink, not sting.
I'm going to say I have two things. Any type of seafood and then like a tuna sandwich or something like that.
Well, that's both seafood, well. Yeah.
Well,
seafood
really.
Or tuna.
Yeah.
No, it's not really.
It comes from the sea.
Yeah,
but isn't it like fake? It's not like people who love seafood don't really necessarily like tuna, right? Because it's not. I thought it wasn't real.
And the hole gets deeper.
Oh, uh-huh. My God.
I thought it was like...
Like, what'd you think it was?
Like made processed junk.
It's you should write for Sunkiss.
Well, like, all right, I guess it's real, but it's just
meat from a fish.
It's just not fresh. Is that it?
It's canned, as opposed to...
So it's yucky?
No.
I know where you're
as
going.
As opposed to, like, fresh grilled tuna.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's going to be different. But it's
very
still,
common.
It's
but
still,
it does come from the sea.
It's still tuna.
Seafood. Yeah,
it's
okay. People who don't like seafood, to your point... People don't like seafood. Some people still like tuna, so it's acceptable. But
this is like that Jessica,
Chicken of the Sea,
Chicken of the Sea.
Yeah, Jessica Simpson.
Yeah,
it's chicken, isn't it? Yeah.
No.
All right.
Why do they call it Chicken of the Sea? All right. Anyhow,
sorry.
What you get for hanging out with billionaires?
It's real.
Yeah.
Well,
so
yes, it's real tuna.
Fish of any kind ranks pretty high.
It's got it.
As far as an odor that is considered offensive in the office, if you're heating something up. So all right. So here are some of the things on the list that can be offensive around the office place. Popcorn is on the list. Fast food. That's a little too general.
I relax. Yeah.
I mean, if you come in with like, you know, Five Guys or something like that, that smells pretty damn good.
I think the only issue is that it makes you hungry for Five Guys. I mean, that, you know, that's I don't find that offensive.
Reheated Chinese food.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah.
It's a strong scent, though. If you don't like Chinese food, that's going to bother you.
It's fake food, though.
Raw.
Shut up.
It's not
that's
real. Also
it's not
pretty,
real.
It's pretty generalized. I mean, there's tons it of is. Different kinds of Chinese food.
Like
yeah,
I might,
but it all
know,
smells the same.
General Tso's chicken smells pretty delightful, I think.
So-so. I think so, yeah.
All right. Raw onions is a bit of a culprit.
Well, that's something that can honestly, you know, have people tearing up.
Mm-hmm.
Who eats raw onions for lunch at their desk?
Right?
Remember the time that the Vidalia onion people dropped off Vidalia onions when we were Y100 and they were trying to sell them as a snack?
Eat
something
it raw.
To eat.
You gotta be out of your friggin' mind.
What's a Vidalia?
It's supposed to be a sweeter onion, and when you cook them, they can be, and they are bigger and fuller, but they were trying to sell them like as a carrot, a baby carrot that you would dip in a dip and then chew on, and I got heartburn for about 4 days as a result from eating those.
Let's see. Hard-boiled eggs.
Really?
Yeah, they smell like farts.
They smell like Casey's ass.
Yeah.
They can.
I mean, I don't get it. I kind of like the smell of hard-boiled eggs.
That scent, I don't think, lingers, though, right? Like, once the egg is gone, that's it.
On the return
Whereas
trip,
if you,
it does.
If you, well, yeah, maybe. If you heat something up, like, that's going to stay in the office.
Yeah, but you don't heat up hard-boiled eggs.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. The smell goes away.
Yeah, but I mean, just hard-boiled eggs in general. We used to call it nasty farts. We used to call them eggers.
Yeah.
Or somebody shoved egg salad in your butt.
Yeah. Maggie Smith says that, too.
So, let me see here.
Somebody plopped an egg on.
What is kimchi?
I know it's one of the rulers.
Right?
Yeah.
K-I-M-C-H-I. Can you look that up, please?
Isn't it Korean food?
Kimchi. I don't know. I'm asking you.
You're the one with the computer.
Yeah,
Korean
man.
Food. And the happy life.
It's Korean food.
Yeah, it's Korean food.
Traditional fermented Korean main dish made of vegetables with a variety of seasonings. It's often described as spicy and sour.
Oh.
In traditional preparation, kimchi is also is often allowed to ferment underground in jars for months.
Sounds delish.
And there are hundreds of varieties of kimchi made from Napa cabbage, radish, scallion, or cucumber as the main ingredients. Let me go to Roy here real quick. Hey, Roy, how you doing?
Hey, buddy. Are all those teeth real?
Those teeth real?
Oh, Zach Ronaldo.
chillin's again. I grew up as with a white family, but my stepdad is black, and my mom will cook that every so often. I will have to leave the house because it just makes me want to vomit, and it'll take over the whole entire house.
Oh, you know what was similar? When they were doing, we had the guys going for the haggis.
Haggis that was gross.
The stink that stuff put out. But I'm going to hazard a guess that most people around Philadelphia aren't sitting down to a big tub of haggis for lunch.
No.
You know what I find also, Preston, besides just the smell, there are a lot of people complain about the sound of people eating the various foods.
Seriously?
Yeah, we've talked about that.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
Besides Nick,
There's a condition that people have where they just can't stand hearing people chew.
Called loud slobbitosis.
I thought it was called being a bitch.
Yeah.
That's gay.
Listen, chompers. By the way, he had Cheerios this morning.
Really? You might as well just give him a bag of glass to eat.
I'll eat him out of the box next time.
You know what I hate hearing people eat? Bananas.
Yeah. Oh, I had a banana,
yes,
too.
Kathy. Yes, you know it, right?
I walk away from Kathy when I eat. I had a banana and Cheerios.
Kathy just slams it in one shot.
You ate it right there. You didn't walk away.
Well, to the corner.
I watched you eat cereal out of a cup.
Corner. It's a foot away from where you are.
And did you take one of my cups to eat your cereal?
No, I brought it from home.
Oh, okay.
His home cup.
Yeah. I had not one of my cups.
No, no, no. I wouldn't touch your cups.
We have people, a couple of people texting in saying that sauerkraut is tough to be around the smell of.
Oh, yeah. I don't like that office. Either.
You know, it's, I guess I run contrary to a lot of this stuff because I like the sauerkraut smells okay.
Oh, I hate it too. Sauerkraut.
Do you really?
Yeah, I can't stand it. I don't
you
like it.
Turn it in and turn it out.
Yeah. Wait, what is that from?
Turn it into sauerkraut.
Yeah,
turn it in, turn it out.
Turn it into sauerkraut. If you don't, I'll Third Reich change.
Oh, my God.
Turn it in, turn it out, turn it into sauerkraut.
I would disagree with sauerkraut. I kind of like
It makes me long for a good hot dog.
It is a strong smell,
baseball
though.
Game. But listen, here, next to the top of this list on most offensive smelling foods that you can eat in the office is hot dogs.
What?
Come the F on.
Come on, man.
Come on, people.
Hot dogs.
Racists.
Make me salivate when I smell them. Let me go to Brian here who wants to comment on kimchi. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning. What's up, man?
I was stationed in Korea for a year when I was in the Air Force, and kimchi doesn't only smell bad when they're eating it, okay, or you're eating it. It also, after it gets in your system, it will stay inside your system, and when you start sweating and you're working out, it comes out of your pores.
It's like garlic.
So you smell even worse when you're sweating.
Smell like it all the time. It's a constant smell you smell around you all the time.
Kimchi.
I've never had it. I don't know if I want to have it.
Garlic is supposed to...
Garlic, you'll sweat garlic.
Yeah.
And you can... Thank you, by the way.
Smell it.
So you can smell garlic when...
You can smell it.
After sweating, I didn't know that.
Yeah, especially if you have... I ate some... I forget where we were having this, but I had an Italian dish, and they were basically leaving... It was huge chunks of garlic before I realized I was eating cut up in the thing, mashed or however they prepare it, or...
Straight up raw garlic?
And so for the next couple of days, I was sweating garlic. Wow. And whenever I'd work out, it would be like reliving the meal all over again.
Wow. All right. Well, anyhow, the number one on this list in particular, most offensive smelling food to eat in the office is reheated fish.
Yeah, that's got to be.
In the microwave oven, in the office microwave oven, because it stinks up the oven, and then your food can smell like
that. And everything that's cooked in it afterwards will have sort of a fishy taste.
You're right.
Preston, how often do you clean your microwave at home?
Three times a day.
I don't know. Every now and then.
Does it have to get really bad for you to clean it?
No. I mean, if I notice it, like some sauce is splattered in there or something like that, I'll clean it
right away. Okay. Yeah, why?
You don't have to clean it. What you do is just leave it on high and leave it running for about 3 or 4 days.
Now, we cleaned our main oven the other day as well.
Did you really?
Yeah, why? Is there something going on at the house?
No. Oh. I just, our microwave was... filthy. It was probably about a week ago, and I was like, how does it get like
this? So let me get this straight. Within the course of just a couple of weeks, you lose your favorite hot dog stand and your microwave is dirty?
I don't know how I'm dealing. But, I'm getting by, Steve.
Yeah, you know?
Now that you ask.
Wait, you were wondering how it got dirty?
How it gets so dirty.
And you used to have the love of God until you ate meat on Friday.
Yeah. No, I still love God.
Okay. Usually, if something has sauce in it or something along those lines, when you put it in the microwave, if you don't cover it up, it will splatter.
Yeah.
And that's how it gets started.
When I microwave gerbils, I put them in a container.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, because they explode.
Absolutely.
But Kathy has, you really have OCD when it comes to microwave cleanliness, don't you?
Cleanliness.
I wipe it down like I would wipe the counter down. If there's something on it, I clean it.
How often?
Well, it gets every time the cleaning ladies come, they clean it. And
they do?
Yeah.
And yet she urinates in the umbrella holder.
What?
It's the dichotomy of Kathy.
It is.
She'll take a quick whiz in the foyer.
So anyhow, these are stinky foods around the office, so keep that in mind.
It's a big issue.
Yep, if you're eating around the office, just to give you a heads up on that. I saw this other story. For the first time in two decades, Florida officials have scheduled a bear hunting season. First time in 20 years, they're actually calling out for a hunting season for bears.
Do you know why this does not shock me? You've had a number of bizarre file stories involving, I believe it's black bear.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a response to a rise in bear attacks, and it has some environmentalists upset. Experts say that there's plenty of room for plenty of room for humans and bears to coexist, but the smell of food. So here we go
kimchi.
Back to this subject. Yeah,
kimchi. We're bears. We love our kimchi.
The smell of food is pulling the animals out of the woods and into neighborhoods. Franklin County, in particular, in the Panhandle, is where it's been happening a lot.
There's a great hot dog stand in Delco.
A few months ago, a bear attacked a teenager there while she walked her dog near a convenience store.
And obviously, we tend to think, oh, well, they're not as formidable
but they can get huge.
Black bears, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. There's garbage strewn throughout the woods and across the road at a recycling center for appliances, and that is part of the problem. Bears can't help but drag tasty things back into the woods with them, so they wander out, they smell it.
This looks good.
And that's where they go after it. Bears are making a comeback in the Panhandle.
We're back, baby.
Where it's mostly forest and in the rest of Florida. In 2002, when the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission did its last population count, there were about 3,000 bears.
Well, the problem is that we, as a species, don't really ever fill out the census. We're too busy.
Now they're counting again. And to reduce human-bear conflicts, the Florida Wildlife Commission wants new feeding rules and more bear-proof trash cans. And hunting is part of that plan.
So was there a time at which there was a large, so about 20 years ago, there was a large bear population in Florida?
Yes, so. Yeah, that's the last time they had a hunting season for bear.
You can hunt in Jersey, right, for bear?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure there's a hunting season. And I have some friends who are hunters in the middle part of the state here in Pennsylvania, and they have hunted bear and have killed bear. But when they go out by themselves, the most challenging part is... Once you've killed the bear, getting the bear out of the woods.
Sure, yeah.
Because they weigh so much.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where you get one of those bear caddies that they sell at Costco.
Right.
Smart. But, I mean, even if you were hunting with somebody, it would be a pain in the ass to...
Yeah,
you
know, like,
you need a few people. Yeah. My fear is that the roles will get reversed at some point, and you'll become the hunted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The state hunt isn't finalized and won't be until the fall. But environmentalists are still upset, and they said that's not the right way to go about it.
I mean, it kind of sucks. The problem is because people are moving into bear territory, and bears are trying to make
tell me about it.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying.
But, I mean, what can you do? I mean,
well, they should at least invite them to the town hall meetings.
Can I speak?
Let them have a voice.
You know, I live near Valley Forge National Park, and over the last 10 years, they've had a concerted effort to thin the deer population in that part of the park, and it's worked. And they've taken the deer meat, and they've given it to shelters and food pantries, and there are fewer accidents with deer near Valley Forge Park now. It's a crappy way to have to thin a population, but you got to do what you got to do.
We're going to have a major deer problem, I think, in the Springfield Broomall area, because there's this huge plot of land, and it's just all woods. It's right behind O'Hara, and it was just sold, and they're going to build houses and a shopping center.
Oh, yeah.
And all of this stuff. And there's, I don't know how many deer live in there.
Where are they going to go?
Where are they going to go?
There's not a lot of open tracts of land left in Delco either, are there?
No.
Like Ridley Park and
Ridley Creek State Park.
Right.
And what about the Last Stand?
The Last Stand? No, it's all
and that's going away.
Once
houses.
They clear it.
Yeah.
Oh, put them there?
Yeah, put them there.
The deer hang out where the Last Stand was? I don't know. But they're looking.
It's sad that it has to be done this way because of encroachment. But it is what it is, and you don't want these animals to just starve to death.
Listen to this: bears in the fall need to consume more than 15,000 calories a day.
Oh my God!
How much food that is?
That is
a whole bunch.
That's Susan Boyle territory.
That's like easily, you know. That's like 10 times what you would normally eat. Right?
Well, how much was who's the swimmer?
Michael Phelps.
Michael Phelps. He was taking in, 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day?
Something like that, yeah. And that's eating a lot. So these guys need to really bulk up, and that's why they're going after everything they can get their hands on and find this stuff out there.
It seems convoluted, that message. Yep. You're looking.
Anyhow. All right, let me see what else I see. Entrepreneurs. Making a bid to create smokable clothing.
Smokable clothing?
Yeah.
For what purpose?
There are two rival brands, Vapeware. And Hoodhorkers.
What does that mean?
It's basically
Hoodhorkers.
They're sweatshirts that you can get high with. You can actually smoke
your clothing.
You can use them as paraphernalia.
All right.
Okay. So you're not actually smoking your clothing. You're smoking through your clothing.
I've used a sneaker as a gravy boat. But I've never done this.
What you do is, the way they have it set up, their hoodies and the drawstrings
are like pot?
Is actually a pipe.
Wow.
No, not like a pot. You put, there's a bowl in one end and a mouthpiece on the other.
I thought you just put the hoodie in your mouth and light it up.
No. It's paraphernalia. Like I said, it's pot paraphernalia.
Oh, okay.
Wearable pot paraphernalia. Complete with a heated disagreement over who invented what and when. This is between...
I think I invented it.
This is between Vapeware and Hoodhorkers.
Okay.
People have done that with, belt buckles and stuff like that.
Johnny Ding Ding.
Johnny Ding Ding.
Yeah.
So Johnny Ding Ding turned a park bench into a bong, right?
That's right. You can't wear pipe. But you can wear a belt buckle.
Yeah. And you can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish.
And tuna fish is actually seafood.
Not seafood. It's not seafood. It's pretend.
How do you smoke out of a belt buckle?
You just... All right, you know who does it? And
you just pull your pants up to your mouth.
Randall Pink Floyd in Days of Confused. Yeah. I think he has a belt buckle bowl.
Belt buckle bowl?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know
so
that.
So this is like the equivalent of the beer, the beer cans and the hats.
Yeah, it's kind
of
like that.
Those sort of novelty things, the binoculars that you can fill up with booze.
Yeah, so you can do it very stealthily, and it won't be obvious that you're smoking grass
or
vaping.
You make a huge bushy mustache, and it's actually a bong that's right in front of your face?
Maybe.
What's the rule in Colorado or other states where it's becoming legal or illegal already about carrying around a bowl? Like a bong is probably too big for the amount that you can smoke out of it.
I don't know.
Can you carry a bowl legally and have pot in it?
That's a good question.
And I don't know what the open... air rules are with
open carry or
no, as far as
like smoking out in a park. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Do they,
I mean, you can possess,
right.
I know small amounts, they say in certain states, but as far as actually burning it,
right.
And smoking it, that might be different because then you're talking about secondhand smoke, mm-hmm. and things along those lines.
Exposure
where can you do it and where can't you do it?
And exposure to children, I assume would have to be an issue.
Yeah. I don't know
either.
Interesting. But you can get this from Hood Horkers or Vapeware.
Hood Horkers and Vapeware.
I mean, honestly, it's especially in an area where it's not legal. You're just basically wearing a flag saying, "Hey, I probably have some drugs on me."
Right. Well, does it? Would a hoodie automatically indicate you had smoking paraphernalia on you?
Well, if it was if it had the logo on it. You know,
yeah, like, that's the thing. So we're looking at a picture of the hoodie, and it's got Hood Horkers written really big on it. So I think it'd be pretty, pretty obvious. But Casey, maybe in areas where pot is legal,
that's
no big
a different
deal.
Story. But you know, the people here in Pennsylvania will do that for the same reason. You know, like, listen, if you smoke pot, that's fine, that's your thing. But if you're gonna walk around with a giant pot leaf T-shirt, you're kind of an idiot.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
you're inviting scrutiny.
Well, scrutiny, but, you know, you're telling people who would arrest you, you know, that, you know, I have pot on me,
right.
You know, essentially.
A roommate of mine in college was Armenian, and I guess hi, H-Y-E, is something in Armenian, and that was what her license plate was, and she used to get pulled over all the time, and they would ask her about it.
Really?
Yeah, because they thought it was, you know, something to
do
with pot.
Oh, then she was likely a pothead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
I believe that.
All right. Hi is also a Jewish name.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh. Anyhow, the way this Hood Horkers works is their pipe sweaters have a glass bowl at one end of a drawstring and a mouthpiece on the other.
Huh.
So it's a tube, mm-hmm. and you suck on one end and you light the other one. And there you go. That's how that works.
Do they have any bras for freebasing?
No.
Check into that.
I would keep that to yourself.
Yeah.
Might be a great idea.
For a great, great gift for mom.
Vaporware hoodies. Pack built-in vaporizers that screw onto one end of the drawstring, and the vape is kept in a discreet pocket and comes with a USB charger.
It's actually pretty ingenious, but I agree with not putting the full the company logo on the front because that is advertising.
Putting it out on display, I agree.
Though, who's going to know what Hood Horkers is?
Here's another invention. You can soon have wireless charging capabilities in your living room. IKEA is soon going to offer furniture equipped with pads that charge mobile devices.
They've had these out for a while.
In furniture?
Yeah, well, not built into the furniture, but, I don't know why it hasn't caught on more than it should have. Like in certain cars now, there are little bins where you can put your rechargeable devices, and it will just recharge them wirelessly.
I think because it actually drains the battery in the long run.
Does it?
I don't think they've been able to perfect it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
More than 80 devices are compatible with the QI technology, or maybe it's key, pronounced key technology. But the iPhone is not, by the way. IKEA will be selling special cases so that iPhones can also be charged on its products.
They still selling Swedish meatballs?
I would imagine.
All right, I'm there.
And lingonberries.
Lingonberries.
Me too. I'll have a lingonberry, please. Extra lingon.
The furniture will need to be plugged into a power source to charge.
Okay, so you'll have to charge your furniture so you can charge your phone.
You plug in your furniture, and it will run customers about $22 more.
Who unplugged the couch?
Each than a standard item. Key or QI technology is already available in hotels, restaurants, airports, and Starbucks branches all over the country.
You know what? I so want one of those sofas that have the built-in little refrigerator and all that stuff with the USB ports, but it's such a tacky-looking, you know, sofa. I guess, like, for a man cave thing, my wife certainly wouldn't go for it.
No.
Because they just look bad, but they're cool. They're, you know, they're kind of cool.
We have a sectional that has a little open-up thing that you can put, you know, remotes.
Put your vaping stuff in there.
Let me ask you, does anybody put the remotes in there?
No, we don't put the remotes in there. We have a couple of, like a deck of cards and you know, the games and things like that we might play in the living room.
I'm so frustrated with trying to find remotes in my household.
You keep losing
them? I don't keep losing them. My kids do. And for a little while there, my oldest was hiding the remote so nobody could find it, including myself.
Why?
So because she wanted to watch what she wanted to watch.
And the only way to run everything the way wanted to run it would be the only... Wow. Not realize you could go to the TV and just do it, too.
Mm-hmm.
So she would hide it so that the channel would remain where it is.
So we would watch smart, Liv and Maddie.
I would freak out.
Good Luck Charlie or Bad Hair Day or whatever it is. You know what?
I'm not sure I want to take a shower with her now.
Yeah, all right.
That's actually pretty smart. Yeah. So kudos to her. Yes. But anyhow, so IKEA is, they have that available now.
Here's what I do, by the way, Casey. I have a little wicker basket that I keep on the center thing there and all the remotes go in that.
Oh.
But if you get to the point where you can just do the voice command, you don't have to worry about it.
I know. And honestly,
ask the kids.
I would totally... Listen, when I watch TV, I always know where the remote is.
Yeah.
Always, you know? When I haven't been watching the TV for a little while, it's always a guessing game. Where is the remote today? Which couch cushion could it be under?
Yeah.
Is it in? It's in the kitchen. Why would the remote be in the kitchen? I don't know. I don't know, but I won. I found the remote.
You sound like De Niro there for a second. I don't know.
You blew it.
Where's the remote?
Casey's channeling his inner De Niro while looking for the
remote. I'm watching that kid's show. No.
You blow it.
Yeah, right. What the hell are you doing?
All right. Let me see.
Okay, fine.
Let me go to here. Sean wants to comment on that. Hey, Sean, how you doing?
What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, bud? Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I ended up putting up one of those charging pads in one of my cables.
Yeah.
And the wires actually started to melt after a while because it got so hot, I almost burned my house down.
You put one of those pads into a piece of furniture, and you kind of left it there passively, and it generated enough heat to almost set on fire.
Yep.
Wow. Well, that's a good piece of advice. Good reason to not do that, then.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole IKEA thing's going to start a whole big problem.
Maybe they got it worked out by now.
Yeah. Maybe.
Step one, eliminate house fires.
Maybe Sean can try it for us.
Yeah.
There was a guy that had a phone explode in his pocket the other day. You know, the battery sometimes can be faulty. And he was wearing sweatpants, like a nylon type of material.
Mm-hmm.
And it got so hot so fast, when it exploded, he couldn't reach in and get it out of his pockets because it melted his pockets together.
Whoa.
It melted the pocket, and he couldn't get the phone out, and so he had to rip his pants off somehow or another.
Like a male dancer.
Kind of like that.
Yeah.
Just rip them right off. And so anyhow, you got to be careful because sometimes those batteries can on rare occasions, they'll explode like that.
The charging thing, though, is just such an ongoing pain in the ass that, you know. I hope we get to this technology because it's just the charge. And then every time they come out with a second or third version of something, they change up the charging connector.
Yes.
So you're forever looking for the particular one for the particular phone you have, and it sucks. Yeah.
Didn't like some little girl invent something that charges your phone in 15 seconds or something like that? I thought I heard that not too long ago.
I did get a solar charger last year, and that's pretty cool, especially in the summertime, and you just leave it out in the sun during the day, bring it, and it's a battery pack that's attached to it.
And it works?
And it works great. You can get a full charge for your phone. You can get a half charge or so for your iPad.
So if you're not close to any charging station.
Especially if you're going to go camping or something like that, yep.
And your phone, I heard, will charge faster if it's in airplane mode.
Oh, yes. That makes sense.
Really? I did hear about that, You are correct. If you plug it in, say, to... especially, you know how it charges slower on a car adapter?
Yeah.
If you put it in airplane mode, it will goose that time up a little bit.
You know, I have the 6 Plus, and it charges up pretty quickly, I have to say. Now, I don't put it into airplane mode, but...
How long does it keep a charge? For a day?
For a long time.
Okay.
It holds a charge, you know, I'm not using it I mean, I'm using this phone more than any other phone I've had because, you know, it's what they call a phablet. It's between a phone and a tablet. But still, it holds a charge for a long time.
Casey, that the girl you were talking about did this at a science fair.
Okay.
So it's nothing that's been marketed yet. So it says tech companies such as Google have approached her, this girl about her invention.
She won a prize for £33,000.
It could charge a mobile within 20 to 30 seconds.
Science fair? I made a leprechaun trap at my science fair.
Did you?
My God,
do
I made a...
tell.
Did it work?
A leprechaun trap?
Yeah.
Yeah, that little bitch.
There was science involved in this.
Yes, let me hear it.
Kathy science.
Well, let me. Yeah,
she
let me.
She used tuna to draw the leprechauns in.
No, it was a
tuna trap.
No, Steve, it was peanut butter.
Oh well, you're going on the science of leprechauns.
I swear. And let me start out by saying, I didn't build anything. My dad did it, and okay. I took it in as my science project.
Could have just stayed with all boys.
Yeah,
that's adorable, though.
It was a little trap. It was like a little box, and we would put peanut butter on the inside. I don't know. I guess they like peanut butter.
So you just used
and he
it
would
as
walk
a...
in, yeah. And when he would get in, the little door, he would hit, you know, I don't know, some little trap, and the door would fall down, and I would catch a leprechaun.
Yeah, my daughter built one.
She caught a dwarf.
But it's not a trap. She says it's the house.
Oh, all right. Okay.
We painted it the other day. It's green and everything. It says leprechauns welcome here. And
for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, we did it last year. We left little gold coins and...
Sounds like a trap to me.
I know, it does.
It's a house that right.
Well, the but second the door closes, a blast furnace turns on.
But she swears it's a house for him to just, because they're out traveling around on St. Patrick's Day.
Your daughter tried to kill me.
Place for him to stop off. So, anyhow.
That's sweet, though.
Yeah. Trap. That was her science project. I love it. All right, we should take a quick break, so we'll come back in just a moment. Stay with us.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.